Adams. A call rang out across the land. Lair Adams, entertainer and entrepreneur, answered the call. He joined forces with friend, businessman, and scholar, Christopher Hart. They teamed with lifelong radio pro Nostra Dennis. Together, they are guardians of liberty and the American way.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, Lair Adams, Nostra Dennis, Johnny Guns, and Christopher Hart, the American adversaries.
The July 7th edition of the American Adversaries has invaded your airspace on News Talk 660 WORL and 1520 WBZW. Lair Adams here with a full rowboat of amazing guests, characters, and of course the best callers in AM radio history live. Kudos today, along with a pat on the back and a tip of the hat. To first, the Joseph A. Bank Men's Clothing Company for their efforts to help returning veterans with the Gary Sinise Foundation. Also, this may sound odd, but a big thanks to Sir Elton John, who has also committed to helping returning veterans, both British and American. You know, we may not agree with everyone's views, but we have to respect when they do what's right. Like my co-host, he's right. On the far right, Christopher Hart!
That's right, folks, everybody. You are listening to the American Adversaries, and that's right, we are up on 660 and 1520 WBZW, so you have your choice today. Of course, you can always listen to us on 660WORL.com if you have a smart device and or computer. And welcome to the show. It is, once again, a lovely Sunday afternoon here in Altamont Springs, Florida, the end of the July 4th weekend. And as such, we have a special treat for you lined up at the end of the show tonight. We're going to play Celebrate America by Lloyd Marcus. I think you're going to enjoy that. We've played it on the show before. That's how we're going to end the show. But right before that, we're going to have Lair's closing comments. Before that, we're going to have Johnny Guns with some WTF news. Before that, we're going to talk about Obamacare. It's a disaster, and everybody's more and more people are seeing the disaster as it is, and that is as a disaster. And before that, we're going to give away some more Roxy Pacifics tonight. Before that, we're going to talk with Jeff Dowdy. That'll be in the second hour tonight. About the Zimmerman trial. Of course, you know, we've been following that close, and Jeff Dowdy is our man. He represents George Zimmerman's brother, Robert, who will be testifying tomorrow morning, I understand.
I went by the courthouse today, Chris, and you wouldn't believe the news crews that have their vans and everything parked there, and there's still a lot of people milling around getting all geared up for tomorrow.
Yeah, so it's going to be this. This should be the week, the culmination of the trial and the verdict. It very much looks like, and we'll, of course, be hearing more from Jeff Dowdy in the second hour of our show, but it very much looks like the defense is not going to take as long as the prosecution to present their case.
Well, the prosecution did it for them.
That's right. But before we get to Jeff Dowdy, we're going to have Carl's Corner. But before we have Carl's Corner, we're going to have Nostra Dennis and Predicts the Past. Before that, we're going to talk about Gumby and Egypt. And once again, Gumby's foreign policy, which is a three-pronged approach. First prong, ignore the problem, hope it goes away. Second problem, which is the stage they always seem to find themselves embroiled in, and so they are in here in Egypt. Make it up as you go along. And the third stage is, of course, claim any victories as your own and disavow any defeats.
Blame it on George Bush.
You just did the ultimate pre-sell. You went right to the end and worked your way back.
That was pretty impressive.
Now we don't have to listen.
All right. So
think about that, Chris. How can we turn that around to it's all George Bush's fault for what's happening in Egypt? It's got to be.
Well, if you saw what I saw this week, you might be more inclined to believe that.
Oh.
Did you guys see George W. bust a move?
Oh, no.
No.
Well, we'll talk about that later on, too.
But it was okay.
We already have some calls coming in, and once again, folks, you are welcome to call, and make sure you have this phone number ready, because we're going to do our Who Said That contest tonight, as well as give away another bottle of Roxy Pacifics. 407-774-8255 is that number. Before we get to the phone caller, let me finish introducing everybody. I am Christopher Hart. The first voice you heard, in case you folks have never listened to our show before, is Lair Adams. We're also joined tonight by our executive producer, Nostra Dennis.
Hello.
Our Johnny Guns, who's our WTF News Hound. Say hello, Johnny.
Hello.
Hello, Johnny. Tyler Israel, our intern.
/ technical assistant producer person now.
And that's right. And of course, Carl Jackson, who has his own show. Hey, Carl.
Hello, everyone.
Once again, he did a great job yesterday morning, folks, on his show. It's the Carl Jackson Show live every Saturday morning from 8 to 9 a.m. And it was another great job. You had Jed Main on your show. You brought out some excellent points about this whole Trayvon circus, if you will, and I want us to discuss that when Jeff Dowdy gets here in a little while. In the meantime, we have Brad from Winter Park who wants to talk about. He's angry about something about the trial. So okay, let's go to Brad. And Brad, how are you doing tonight? Thanks for calling.
Oh, great, fellas! Happy Sunday to you
and to you as well.
The thing that concerns me, obviously, is we've had all this time now. The prosecution's done.
Yep.
And what I've noticed is that, and Mark Ramirez said it best, his side, the defense, not only has an eyewitness who has no skin in the game, he's a true neutral eyewitness, but we also have that overwhelming physical evidence that the only bruises on the body of Trayvon Martin were right on his knuckles. That's it. And so this is very compelling to me. And I just hope, I'm old enough to remember the O.J. trial where we had overwhelming DNA evidence, and that jury instead chose to ignore that and acquit O.J. Simpson. Yeah. I'm just hoping that we have six here and not 12. I'm just hoping that these six people won't ignore real evidence as it stares them in the face.
Well, Brad,
the judge sure did.
Well, we feel the same way, but I'm going to ask you to take it a step farther than hope. I want you to pray. I want you to pray tonight. I want you to pray every day, every night about this trial, that justice be done, and that the political overtones and all of these overtones, and this is what you're meaning when you're talking about the O.J. trial. What we all have to understand is that the O.J. trial was bigger than even O.J. Simpson. Okay, it was all about celebrity. It was all about racism. It was all about the history of the Los Angeles Police Department. And we very much have the same elements involved here. So it's going to take more than hope, Brad. It's going to take prayer. And we're going to be asking all of our listeners tonight to pray that this decision comes out truly righteous and correct according to the facts and justice. That's all we can do. Because you're absolutely right. It's definitely in the hands of the jury. Lair's right. The judge does not want any part of dismissing these charges. She has already decided.
Hasn't listened to the evidence,
I think Jeff Dowdy's made this clear to us in the past, that she has decided that this trial is going to go to the jury. Mm-hmm. The jury is going to decide this case. For better or worse, I think that she has made the decision that is the best outcome. Whatever the jury decides, that would be the best way to dispense of this case. I don't necessarily agree with her, given the facts, as you have pointed out, Brad, but that's the lay of the land. So that's why, once again, I ask you to do more than hope, my friend. I ask you to pray.
Now, Brad, did you hear our show this last week? We had Jeff on, and Jeff couldn't believe the evidence that the judge allowed into this case. It was evidence that could only be allowed into a first-degree murder case. This is a second-degree murder
case.
And only in the
sentencing phase.
Exactly.
So,
and she definitely overstepped her bounds, as everyone in the legal system. So watch this week for maybe the judge taking a step back.
And like Jeff said, that could be grounds for an appeal.
Absolutely.
I'm just asking for, I remember Jeff Dowdy mentioning that, but I can't remember the specifics. Can you guys tell me?
The specifics of?
The specifics of what testimony would be allowed only in the first degree murder.
It was the medical exam, the so-called medical examiner who testified Friday and said that Trayvon suffered and was
how
in pain
long he suffered
for 10
his
minutes.
Pain and suffering.
Yeah, that was above and beyond what should have been allowed.
I like to ask.
Thank you, Brad, by the way, for the call.
I'd like to ask Jeff Dowdy this. I know Jed Main spoke to me and said, based on that, That is a reason for appeal
a
in this
reversal,
case. Yeah.
A reversal, yeah. So, okay. And I suppose she could do what she did with the defense testimony when the deputy testified that he, you know, his opinion, he believed, he thought that Zimmerman was being truthful or something, and then she read instructions to the jury that said they were to disregard that. I suppose we'll be talking about that stuff with Jeff Dowdy. I'm just speculating. But those are all things, folks, that we will be talking about with Jeff Dowdy, a prominent criminal defense attorney here in Central Florida. He's been our expert on this case from the very start. But before we get there, we've got some other journeys to take. And the first one is going to take us across the ocean to Egypt. Because, as you know, there are big changes going on over there in Egypt. And once again, the administration finds itself behind the cue ball, so to speak, or behind the eight ball, I guess is more the expression, because they are in a quandary. Because we have a law that was passed, I believe, sometime in the 1990s. And I'm not sure who signed it into effect.
I know what you're
gonna
say.
But it basically says that if there is a military coup in any country, we are to cut off all aid to that country. And as we have all seen pretty much with our own eyes this week, we have pretty well witnessed a classical, if you will, military coup.
And we're not talking about pigeon noise.
No, it's a coup. We were not, you know, there wasn't a lot of shooting on the military's part, none that I know of. It was a painless coup, unless if you're Mohammed Morsi and his cohorts. But certainly the military took over the country away from a duly elected, whether you like him or not,
Democratically elected civilian
president. And so the quandary the administration now finds itself in is if they admit that this is a coup, and nobody's going to say that they're going to. I mean, they're champions at not saying what things are. Just look at the terrorism case at Fort Hood. You know, workplace violence. Give me a break. So, obviously, they can dance around this. Jeff, please give me three more minutes in this segment. Yeah. The point is, if it is recognized as a coup, then we are supposed to cut off all the aid. Now, there's about $1.5 billion that's already in the channels, and there are some
It wasn't all cash.
How about all those fighters we were supposed to be giving them?
That's part of the aid. That's part of the aid package. Now, there are people out there and pretty prominent voices who are saying the aid should be cut off. Amongst them is John McCain. He was on one of the talk shows this morning. I believe it was CBS. Schieffer's taken a week off, but the CBS show that he normally hosts had John McCain on there, and he was saying, look, this is a military coup. You know, this basically shouldn't have happened. It shouldn't have happened this way. But now that it has, we have to abide by our laws. We can't just decide, you know, that we're going to. But, of course, once again, Obama's a champion at deciding which laws he wants to enforce or not. Just take a look at Obamacare, which we'll be talking about later on, which he's decided not to enforce now for a while, at least for businesses.
Ted Cruz on the total other side of the argument.
Well, exactly.
Ted Cruz is saying we need to continue that aid to them because we've got to keep them protected while this goes on.
Well, I kind of fall on Ted Cruz's side. The $1.5 billion is already in the channel works. That's pretty much already committed. And not only would I give them that $1.5 billion, but I'd probably throw down another $1.5 billion on top of it.
Well, Chris, because the only ally we have in Egypt is the military.
They are an extremely piece of the foreign policy puzzle in that entire part of the world. They are one of the largest Arab states in the world, with some that is estimated maybe 90 million of population. And they are extremely important. And generally speaking, throughout history, they have been one of the more tolerant, if you will, societies amongst the religions, because Islam wasn't native to Egypt the way it was more or less to the reigning powers we now have in Saudi Arabia, Iran, mm-hmm. and the rest of the Middle East. You know, Egypt had the pharaohs and all that great history. And then they also had the Romans come in there, the Greeks come in there, and the Christians come in there long before the Muslims came in. So there's a different history entirely involved with Egypt here. And they, prior to the last decade or so, were one of the more westernized countries in the Middle East. I mean, you could go over mm-hmm. there and find bikinied women and maybe even some topless women on the beaches. You ain't going to find them there now. But that's because of the Islamist trend that was going on. The downside of what happened is it would have been nice if Morrissey had gotten his licking at the polls. You know what I'm saying? If he had been defeated in an election and if it had happened in that sort of process. Unfortunately, Egypt has no real infrastructure to provide for that. It's not as easy as what we perceive has happened in Afghanistan and in Iraq. Iraq, by the way, just had some parliamentary elections, went off without a hitch over there.
Mm-hmm.
They're still having the bombings going on over there, but basically they're still going on with business. Now, what is the difference? The difference is we went into Iraq and helped establish their system. We went into Afghanistan and helped establish their system. Where the Obama administration dropped the ball on Egypt is they should have been in there from the start, wheeling and dealing with Morrissey and spelling it out to him. And maybe they did. I don't know. We don't know what they do behind the scenes. But they should have spelled it out to him.
But they're not successful.
They should have waved about $1 billion under his nose and said, look, if you play along, this is going to be yours. All right? If you don't play along, look at the picture of Hosni over there. You know, Hosni Mubarak. But that's not what they did. They just allowed things to sort of take their course, which may not be so bad in the long run, and I'll talk about that when we get back and why we should sweeten the pot to Egypt rather than cut back.
Well, now, would that be John Kerry, or would that be our amazing president? Who knows, folks? We are the American Adversaries, and we know some things and we don't know others, but we try to find out. We'll be right back.
The battle is heating up. You're listening to the American Adversaries on 660 WORL and on 1520 The Biz, if you can take it.
Okay, we're back, folks. We're the American Adversaries. It is a beautiful Sunday afternoon here in Central Florida. I hope you're enjoying the last of our 4th of July holiday weekend. Once again, tonight, as we finish up our show tonight, we're going to play you Celebrate America by Lloyd Marcus. It's a great song. I think it's appropriate for a 4th of July weekend, if you will. Okay, we're talking about Egypt and what's going on over there, and I've thrown the cards down on the table. I disagree once again, it seems, with John McCain, who says we should cut off all aid to Egypt, and technically, legally speaking, he's correct, because our law says in the case of a coup, we are to cut off aid. I think that would be the wrong thing to do right now, but Carl made a point during the break that I want to address and take this point to its end here.
Yeah, basically, the point was that Obama, from the inception, if you will, of his relationship with Morsi, it was flawed in that He granted Morsi gifts, if you will, without any stipulations. We have the planes going over there, the jets, aid, yeah, with no stipulations. So,
and that's not what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
I'm talking about much more akin to what we did when the Soviet Union fell. When the Soviet Union fell, we had all these brainiacs, Americans, go in there and basically show them how to set up their system. We need the same brainiacs, if you will, to go into Egypt. And they need to go in there under the guise of the State Department, the CIA, all these agencies need to go in there and show these people how it's done. And the candy, the sugar, to get them to do that is money. Because their economy is suffering tremendously. What was it Abe Katzman told us the other day? The per capita income has been halved, and it was already $2
yeah,
a day.
Yeah.
You got to live over to live over there. Average Egyptian lives on $1 a day. You can't go very far on a dollar. That's the main reason why they're upset over there. And Morsi wasn't doing anything about it. And had he done something about it, I'm sure he would still be in power. There's no question in my mind about it. So what we need to do is get that ball in the works, get their economy turned around. We need to pump an infusion of money in there. But better than that, we need to have conditions, as Carl is saying, that we didn't do the first time to go along with this time. And before you make your point, the one last thing I would say is this. If we pull that money out, guess who's going to stick money in our place?
Oh, Iran.
And Russia.
Or Russia.
That's right. They're both waiting there, waiting to do it.
Or Iran through Russia. Or that's, Russia through Iran.
That's right. That's right. But you were going to make a point.
Well, I was just going to say that these people, you know, at this point in time, they're looking for money from anybody. They expected to get this new fellow in a year ago. And instead of working on the economy, he worked so hard on making it a theocracy.
Right.
That people saw through it. They saw through the entire scam. You're not really helping us out. You're trying to bend us towards this will, and this isn't what we bargained for.
And it's a shame that they didn't express that will that you're expressing, at the polls, and that he didn't last long enough to be beaten at the polls, because it would have been a much more resounding defeat for that theocratical type of thinking. But now, see, the Muslim Brotherhood can go around saying, they just didn't like us. See, they didn't want us to be in their game, so we're going to have to resort back to violence.
Well, doesn't it sound a lot like what happened with Barack's election, re-election? I mean, think about it. A lot of people re-elected him, and now they're thinking, wait a minute, I wanted these other things. I thought but I'm not getting it.
Well, their economy is in the tank, and their president doesn't seem to care. Wouldn't it be awful to live in a country like that?
Good point.
Well, you know, at the same time, though, I'm not sure. I can't recall if this was Abe Katzman or if I heard it from someone else on radio. But they said this would do severe damage to the Muslim Brotherhood, and that they've been preaching for, what, the 83 years or so, that if they were to rule Egypt, it would flourish. Or maybe it's 45 years. I could be totally off in years. And so that didn't happen, but I still understand.
All I'm saying is that now they can go around saying, well, they didn't let us do it. They cut us short. I was only there 1 year.
Sure.
They threw me out. They saw I was going to do it, so they threw me out. You
see, what's Barack's excuse going to be?
I was thinking the same thing.
You know, he's in the make it up as you go along stage, him and old Val Jarrett.
After 8 years, if he does nothing, what's his excuse going to be?
And finally, and this is another reason why we can't cut back right now, folks, it's just not the right time to punish Egypt. We need to help Egypt and not punish them. And think about what's going on around the rest of the world. There's an article in this weekend's Wall Street Journal, the Friday edition, that is. It's entitled, America Needs Its Frontline Allies Now More Than Ever. And it's an article which spells out how our friends around the world are reassessing now their situation. And one of the things that they're starting to do is spend more and more on military, because they are afraid the United States is not going to be there in the future to help them. Wasn't it just a couple of weeks ago we were saying that this bozo idea out of Gumby about cutting back on nuclear weapons was going to somehow rid the world of them? Mm-hmm. No, it'll only make the rest of the world desire them more, because they will be frightened. The United States has been the protectorate around this world, whether we liked it or not, folks. If we're not going to do it, if we pull out of Egypt, I guarantee you, and Lair's right, Iran will step in, Russia will step in, the bad guys will take over, and the whole situation will be much worse off.
And let's face it, if you have just a few countries that have nuclear weapons, at least they're localized. In this situation, hey, we all gotta build nukes. Folks, the American Adversaries will be back with more mayhem.
Everybody needs a little nukey.
It's political, professional wrestling at its finest. The American Adversaries on 660 WORL and on 1520 The Biz.
Okay, folks, welcome back. That's right. You are listening to The American Adversaries, and we are here live coming at you on Sunday afternoon. 407-774-8255 is the number. Before we went to the break, we were talking a little bit about nuclear weapons. Nuclear weapons. And,
or as Mr. Bush would say, nuclear.
Nuclear weapons. we're going to see an arms race in nuclear weapons, just like we're now seeing in other weapons. Let me just read a couple of paragraphs of this article, and then we're going to go to some stuff from Nostradamus. When Obama was over there having the G8 summit, you know, in his little pouting session with Putin, there was actually war games going on over there in Israel, not Israel, Ireland, where the United States Navy was participating, and there are exercises going on in other places. And let me just read a couple of little paragraphs from this article. It was in this weekend's Wall Street Journal. America needs its frontline allies now more than ever. The exercises that I just referred to, the exercises highlight the similar predicaments facing U.S. allies in critical regions. In an arc that stretches from Eastern Europe to the Persian Gulf to East Asia, vulnerable states on the outer periphery of U.S. power are re-examining their strategic menus in the face of rising or revisionist powers, most notably China, Russia, and Iran. Many of these smaller states are embarking on major, though largely unnoticed, arms buildups. Singapore is shopping for missiles. Vietnam is buying kilo-class submarines. Saudi Arabia recently bought 84 F-15s, and the Gulf states are expanding their defensive budgets. Even Poland, despite being a member of NATO and thus under the United States security umbrella, has embarked on a $40 billion arms spending spree to acquire everything from anti-ship missiles and drones to new air defense systems. According to a report published this year by the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute, frontline U.S. military allies, frontline U.S. allies now make up five of the top 10 military importers in the world. As much, and this is probably more important, as much as armaments, U.S. allies are also collecting new friendships. And it goes on to describe how these countries, all of our friends basically, are reassessing their friendship with the United States of America. And it all goes back to Gumby and his three-pronged foreign policy, where it is no foreign policy to speak of. And the cutbacks in the military, and the, his cutbacks in the military, in the nuclear arsenal, they are scared, just like we said they would be. And they're going to react, just like we said they would react, which is to go out and try to help themselves in other fashions. And he also says that one of the main things, this is partly a result of recent U.S. policy, which has often seemed to downgrade alliances in favor of accommodation with large authoritarian powers. What do you call it, Lair? You know?
Big brother?
No, when we're giving in to the other, appeasement.
Oh, absolutely.
That's what he's saying. This is partly a result of recent U.S. policy, which has often seemed to downgrade alliances, that's our friendships, in favor of accommodation with large authoritarian powers, like Iran, like Russia, and China. The world is scared because the United States is perceived as being weak and spineless because we have a president who projects that. And when you have him going around acting like Gumby, why shouldn't people think he's spineless? I mean, Gumby, you can bend him in any direction, right?
And this is the guy who hated Winston Churchill, who made the comment about appeasers, which is absolutely what he is.
All right, let's go to Rick now, and he wants to make a comment about Egypt, and then we need to move on to Nostradamus. Hey, thank you, Rick, for calling. We appreciate you being out there tonight.
Evening, guys.
Evening.
The thing about Egypt, from what I see, the military stepped in to prevent civil war. They didn't go in to take over the country. As a matter of fact, I doubt that the military wants to take over at all because Egypt is a hot mess. They don't want anything to do with it, and they already put Mohammed al-Baradei as the prime minister.
Well, they've tried to. Evidently, that's not been finalized yet. There's still stuff up in the air. I think that, the fact that this is seems to be being made up as it goes along indicates that it might have been a little bit more spontaneous. But I don't know exactly what the military's motivations are, other than that the country is definitely in dire straits, economically speaking. And they didn't think that Morsi was going to be able to pull them out of that.
And right now,
well, they're
on
the verge of civil war because you had the supporters of the Muslim Brotherhood against the people that were trying to oust him.
Well, that's right, and the Muslim Brotherhood may resort now to violence. However, it's going to be the violence like you're seeing happen in Iraq, where it's a lot of bombs going off and stuff like that. It's not going to be the violence like you see going on in Syria, because
right.
there simply aren't the weapons in the Muslim Brotherhood hands right now to do that.
And right now, the Egyptian military does not want to run the country. I heard it described on another Salem host. Someone called in and said, he had a boss who always used to hate it when people brought him problems. And he would say, why are you bringing this stinky fish and putting it on my desk? That's what the Egyptian economy is right now. It's a stinky fish. And the military don't want to be responsible for that. They just want to restore order and move on.
Yeah, it's
as long as there's order, the military is the biggest businessmen in Egypt. They've they run businesses there.
Right, and they want a good economy there, sure.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird situation. I appreciate your insight, Rick. And it's so weird because they have, what's the guy's name, Adli Mansour, that's taken over. And from what I heard, there were even military officials that stated part of the issue for them was the fact that some of their good guys in the military were I guess,
systematically.
Quitting. Yeah, falling off as a result of Morsi, where Morsi seemed to want to, make the military a Muslim Brotherhood military.
Morsi was following suit of what President Obama's been doing.
Sure. Replacing with his men.
That's right, yeah. Weeding out our military of people who disagree with him or who have different policy visions than he does. He doesn't appreciate the diversity, if you will. He'd rather have his own people thinking his own way. But I choose to look at this as an opportunity. We missed the first opportunity to help get in there and straighten this situation out and treat Egypt as an ally, which is what they are supposed to have been. We'll see what happens.
Rick? As far as the law goes, Congress can pass a law that would exempt this situation.
Well, we'll see what happens with the legalities of it. Like I say, that never seems to stop Barack Obama, at least when it comes to domestic issues, does it? So,
true.
All right, thanks.
Thanks,
just change the words.
We appreciate you being out there. All right, let's go to Phyllis now. Phyllis, thank you for calling. We appreciate you being out there tonight.
Hi. I'm calling in relation to, the Zimmerman trial, although that is really that's not central to what I'm calling about, but the fact that in that, we see how we are being divided, racially divided, politically divided, and I am just so aware of the many voices that seek to divide us as a people.
That's true, but there are glimmers of hope out there, and I want to reflect on one here just for a moment now that you brought that out.
Okay,
because,
go ahead, but then I want to continue. Please.
Okay, because issues divide, but sometimes issues also unite. Let's take, for instance, the immigration issue. We've had on our show, and Carl Jackson had this young lady on his show yesterday morning, Leah Durant. She's a progressive. She has a progressive organization, and yet we are allied with her on our opinion of this new immigration bill that has been passed through the Senate. Mm-hmm. So there are times when an issue can actually bring us once again together, at least for that fleeting moment, and let us know once again that, hey, that person on the other side is a human being, after all. And one of the beauties of our democratic form of government is that even if we're wrong, or if let's put it this way, even if we lose, in the end, we may yet still win and be correct. It allows for changes in attitudes and changes in latitudes, if you don't mind me parroting a Jimmy Buffett song there. So there are glimmers. Don't be so discouraged. I mean, our founding fathers saw great value in an adversarial form of governing. And that, by its very nature, sort of beckons argument. But that they saw as being better than everyone being forced to do the same, to do everything the same way, to be united on all issues.
To not be decisive.
Yeah, so don't let our divisiveness over a lot of issues discourage you. Try to see the positive in that, and then also see the fact that once in a while, we're going to agree with our political quote-unquote enemies.
And she had another point, too, she'd like to make.
Yeah, go ahead, Phyllis.
It's more than a point. It's a whole lot. And basically it was that the church, we as Christians, cannot and must not be divided because we see how, all of the pressures that are being brought to bear upon us and against us, and dividing, racially, being racially divided. The fact that those who are believers have a unity that's greater than any other, greater than any political unity or special agenda or whatever.
Phyllis, and this is... I actually know this, Phyllis. I know who this is.
Oh,
so.
Carl, hi.
Hey, Phyllis. I'll be talking about this on Carl's Corner a little bit.
Will you?
I will.
Okay.
Let me share what's on my heart, okay? I woke up this morning with that really on my heart, and I was really praying about that there might be a unity. I have become aware that here in Castleberry, there are some pastors that meet together for fellowship and for prayer. And that this is something that could really, if that were to happen in other communities, it could be something very powerful.
Okay.
Where they could meet together and work together to reach out to the needs of people and then speak truth into the culture, which we need so very badly.
Okay, well, Carl said he's going to be addressing that, but you make an excellent point. And we have implored, you know, the religious leaders to become more socially active, if you will.
Yes.
And I believe that's what you're asking for.
Yes.
So
one other thing I want to mention. The message in my church today was on reconciliation. It was from Matthew chapter 5, Christ's Sermon on the Mount. And it was intended basically for, it was directed toward interpersonal relationships. But there's a lot of reconciliation that would need to be happening if this were to occur, and it was such a good message. I just, if it's okay, I'd like to say where a person can go online to hear that message.
Okay, if you'll do it briefly, because we have to move
on. MetroLife.org. Click on sermons and then go to the current series, the July 7th message. And I think this would be a message that would be very helpful.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. And as I said, be confident out there, because those sort of things can sweep the nation in a matter of hours. Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you so very much,
Phyllis.
We appreciate it. Okay. You know, a wave, it starts out very small but can roar into a big old thing. Okay. And speaking of roaring, let's go now to Nostradamus, who's going to roar about the past.
Nostradamus.
Yes?
Predict.
What? The past. Somehow I knew the five-minute professor would say that. I'll make this brief because Carl's Corner is coming right up. The Westboro Baptist Church is at it again. Do you know where they were today? Do you know where they were?
No.
They were picketing the funerals of the 19 firefighters killed fighting wildfires in Arizona. Their reason was, well, it was an all-consuming fire, and praise God for that. Now, don't feel like you're being left out if you are a UCF student, because they'll be at UCF.
I thought they protested because of possible gay issues. I'm trying to think what the firefighters ever had to do with gays in the military or gays in firefighting or...
They're just trying to get publicity.
Among the things they'll be protesting against this summer, they'll be picketing the Supreme Court for their striking down the DOMA. They're going to be picketing pop star Taylor Swift's August 3rd concert.
I heard that, yeah.
Because she struts around the world stage like a proud, well, you can fill in the blank. And they are picketing UCF because the university spends money on programs for certain students, including gay and transgendered students. And Westboro says that this formally and audaciously extends their middle finger in the face of their creator.
Right.
UCF students are planning a counter-protest, but a Facebook page that was created to organize the event could not be located on Friday afternoon. Okay, Obamacare is coming, and you know what? If you're not eligible, what do you do? Don't worry about it. You can just lie. The government has admitted, okay, people from the Washington Post, their names were Sarah Cliff and Sonia Somashekar. They have discovered that the Obama administration buried in the Federal Register the announcement that the government won't be able to verify whether or not applicants for Obamacare insurance are qualified. Instead, until at least 2015, these states that accept it, the 16 states that are setting up their own exchanges, will be able to accept the applicant's attestation without further verification.
So just claim it?
Just say, yeah, I'm eligible. Okay, good enough for me.
Well, the government knows that every time they give away money in whatever form that it gives it away, there's all kinds of fraud and abuse. I guess they've just given in to that.
Which is why.
Might as well make it easy. They're going to do it anyway, right? Yeah, hey.
And here's a quickie.
They can only tax them on it, the money they stole from them.
And here's the last one. If you're on Facebook, you probably know that it's a place where you can put all kinds of crazy ideas out there. Well, there's a webpage out there called Kill Zimmerman. I couldn't believe it. I went to it. I said, well, this is ridiculous. I'm going to ask them to take down this page because it's harassing and it's inflammatory. They sent me a letter. Thank you for taking the time to report something that you feel may violate our community standards. Reports like yours are an important part of making Facebook a safe and welcoming environment. We reviewed the page you reported for harassment and found it doesn't violate our community standards on bullying and harassment.
Of course, he's a white Hispanic. He's not black.
If you don't like Kill Zimmerman, there's another page, George Zimmerman Must Die. They're both up. They're both fine, according to Facebook.
Well, they both suggest him going to heaven, so I see no problem with it.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right, anyway, folks, we'll be talking with Jeff Doughty about the Zimmerman trial in the second hour of our show. We've got a loaded third hour of our show, but we're not done with the first hour of our show. When we come back, we're going to have Carl's Corner with Carl Jackson. Please stick around.
Professional wrestler and WWE Hall of Famer Hacksaw Jim Duggan, and I know wrestling. And for the best in political professional wrestling, listen to the American Adversaries on 660 WORL. Tough guy.
Hi-ho! Oh, yeah. It's the American Adversaries, the Sunday night edition. Noster Dennis here in the studio with Tyler Israel, Johnny Guns, Lair Adams, Christopher Hart, Jeff Sunnis behind the board pressing all the buttons. And the guy who's the focus of this next segment, he's a little short this week. I think he's only 5'11" now instead of his usual 6'2". It is Carl Jackson. It is time for Carl's Corner.
All right. Hello, everyone. In lieu of the Zimmerman trial, and also in lieu of the racial discrimination going on against Paula Deen, I'd like to talk about 8 ways we can recapture the racial harmony that President Obama stole. Number one, I'll go through them all, and then we'll come back. And number one, recognize that all people are made in God's image. No one race is superior or deserving of extra rights over another, as God doesn't have favorites. Number two, When you can empathize or sympathize with people on a human level, recognize that all people share your attributes on an emotional and physiological level. Number three, as much as it depends on you, and this is straight out of Scripture, be at peace with all men. This way you constantly examine yourself. Number four, recognize that being prejudiced is not the same as racism. There's an important distinction, and perhaps we'll have time to get into it. Number five, preserve the rule of law under our Constitution so as to not give preferential treatment to anyone or any groups of people. Number six, fire race baiters. That would mean, well, we missed out on firing Obama, but hopefully we can fire Al Sharpton and people like Al Sharpton.
But he doesn't have a job. How are you going to fire him?
We'll work on that. Number seven, appreciate how far we've come in race relations. And number eight, stand ready to forgive those that are truly repentant. So these are 8 ways we can recapture the racial harmony that President Obama stole. I'll go back to number one.
Well, before you do that, let me just suggest, you said the one about Al Sharpton, fire these guys. I would suggest replace the word fire with reject. They don't have to have a job to reject their ridiculous assertions.
And that's a better way to put it, because honestly, that's the explanation that I was going to give.
Just get all of Dikembe Mutombo on them.
These are
not in my house.
No, not in my house.
Carl, let me ask you, how many times does Sharpton have to be wrong before people just totally discount him? I mean, from the Tawana Brawley case to this to so many other things.
The problem with Sharpton's message, what makes it so powerful, is that there are so many people out there who want to believe it.
Well, sure.
Exactly.
And who've been told that for their whole lives in a lot of cases.
And that's where we need, that's the Achilles heel, is in understanding that fact right there. And that's how you have to attack Al Sharpton. You're not going to take that fella down and attack him head on. I mean, it's fun to beat up against him, but it's not going to take him down, because the people are going to want to believe his side of the argument, because that's just what they're going to want to do.
A la Rachel Gentile.
Yeah. I mean, all right, going back to my number one point, recognize that all people are made in God's image. No one race is superior or deserving of extra rights over another, as God doesn't have favorites. I mean, this seems so simple, and for those of you that don't believe in God, well, too bad, I'm sorry. The fact of the matter is, when you understand that people are made in God's image, then you are more likely to be able to empathize with people, sympathize with people and their hardships. And you recognize that, hey, this is just, and when I'm sitting with American Adversaries here, I don't I don't look at people as, hey, they're white or they're black necessarily. Now, I'm not colorblind because I really think that's a stupid statement. I believe that we shouldn't be colorblind because we should appreciate different cultures. But what I understand is beneath the darker skin or beneath the lighter skin are people just like I am.
If
and we're all made in God's image.
Bleed.
Exactly. And we have the same wants, desires, you know, feelings, needs, so on, et cetera.
Well, let me ask you about point four then, given that, because you said that being prejudiced is not the same as racism. What did you mean by
that? This is an important distinction. You have to understand that prejudice is simply prejudging. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're racist. You know, racists hate people for the sake of hating people, strictly based upon skin color. Now, there may be, here's what I believe. I believe that all of us have prejudice, but when we come into prejudice is just simply not knowing enough about someone or something. So when we come to know that person, we're just like, hey, or that thing, whatever. It's like, okay, hey, I understand this now, no biggie. Racism is inherently evil because despite a person's good works, despite a person's relationship with God, despite the way a person treats you, you cannot get past their race.
So prejudice can be fixed.
Yeah, prejudice is simple to be fixed, and it's something that we all inherently have. And I would argue that prejudice can be a good thing because it allows you to prejudge situations at times.
That word I was going to use, prejudge. That's just what it is.
And I mean, I'll say this straight up. I'm a black guy, so you're not going to see me going out in the middle of a coey at 12 at night. I'm going to prejudge that situation. Now, as a black guy, I'm also not going to go in Paramore at midnight. I'm going to prejudge that situation. Now, if I walk down there, I might meet some good people and I may be safe, all well and good. But prejudice isn't necessarily bad, but it's bad if you stay there just based upon someone's race.
Okay. Very well put, Carl Jackson. And we'll be back after this short break.
When America fell into darkness, a call rang out across the land. Blair Adams, entertainer and entrepreneur, answered the call. He joined forces with friend, businessman, and scholar, Christopher Hart. They teamed with lifelong radio pro Nostra Dennis. Together, they are guardians of liberty and the American way.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, Blair Adams, Nostra Dennis, Johnny Guns, and Christopher Hart, the American Adversaries.
Okay, and we're ready for hour number two of our Sunday 3-hour tour. The American Adversaries coming at you live from Altamont Springs, Florida on 660 WORL and 1520 WBZW. And we're always streaming live at 660WORL.com. Once again, welcome to our show. If you happen to have missed the first hour, we talked about quite a few things, and you can always go to Podbean. That's like in green bean, except Podbean. That's P-O-D bean. You can go to Podbean and type in American Adversaries and hear replays of our shows as many times as you like and download them and share them with your friends. Okay, folks, welcome back. I am Christopher Hart, along with Lair Adams, Nostra Dennis, Carl Jackson, Johnny Guns, Tyler Israel, and Jeff Sennis. We are now joined in live in studio by our man who's helping us cover this Zimmerman trial, and that's, of course, Jeff Dowdy. He's a prominent criminal defense attorney here in Central Florida, been practicing, you said, what, 23 years?
23 years.
23 years, handled over 100 cases in front of a court, in front of a jury. And
some in front of this judge.
And so he knows what he's talking about when it comes to these matters, so we're going to spend the next hour talking with him about the Zimmerman trial. If you would like to participate in that conversation, 407-774-8255 is the number. 407-774-8255 is the number. We've already had a caller at the very beginning of the show, Brad, who expressed his concern about this trial and the way it's going. And now I see we also have Dave from Apopka on line one. So let's go ahead and take Dave, and then we'll once again be talking with Jeff Dowdy tonight. By the way, Jeff, thanks again for being with us here on a Sunday. Sunday night.
Thank you so much, guys.
And Jeff, by the way, in case you haven't heard the last couple of weeks, Jeff Doughty does represent Robert Zimmerman, the older brother of George Zimmerman. And I understand Robert is set to testify in the morning. Is that your understanding, Jeff?
As of Friday, he was, and he expresses his condolences. I mean, he couldn't come. Yeah, so he's sorry he couldn't come. He's scheduled to testify. I'm not sure if he's going through or not. He's under subpoena. The state attorney has still not let him loose from the subpoena. He might testify tomorrow, but who knows?
Okay. All right, so he is still under subpoena. He can't even listen to the show, but we want to send our best wishes to Robert as well.
He can podbean it later.
And later on. And certainly, Robert, I hope will come back and be on the show after he is released from his court obligations. Okay, so let's go now to Dave from Apopka. Dave, thank you for calling tonight. And real quickly, your question.
Yes, when the medical examiner was testifying, he mentioned briefly and only once that Trayvon had tattoos, plural. Does anybody know what those tattoos were? Because that may indicate his propensity for violence.
Or gang activity.
Or it could be, if they were maybe religious, just the opposite. But I'm just curious, has anybody identified and or addressed the nature of the tattoos?
Yeah. Actually, they pretty much calmed that right out the bat. The prosecution did when Sabrina Fulton got onto the stand. Right away, they explained that one of the tattoos was a pair of praying hands with pearls running through them with the names of his grandmother and an aunt or something like that. And the other tattoo was just the name of Sabrina Fulton. So they weren't any thuggish type tattoos.
Okay. The only reason I ask is when the information came out as to what was on his telephone, the pictures of the gun and other things.
Well, I'm glad you raised this point because that's
just wondering if the tattoos were of like.
Well, I'm glad you raised this point though in general because that's one of the things I wanted to discuss with Jeff Doughty tonight. So, thank you, Dave, for the call. We appreciate you being out there. Jeff, I know the judge has said before that she was not going to allow the defense to bring in any information in regards to Trayvon being suspended from school, to have been in several fights, to have shown a fight. Evidently, he had videotaped a fight on his telephone. One of his friends in fight with someone else. Is that reversible? Can she change her mind on that, especially in lieu of the fact that she allowed the state to introduce evidence in regards to George Zimmerman's background?
Well, in the prosecution's case, it was this defense. They said it opened the door to allow George Zimmerman's past, and they went through it and they opened the door, and she allowed that. But that doesn't open the door for Trayvon yet. However, in the defense's case, should the cross-examination of the state open the door to that issue, then they will. But as we stand here right now, they're not going to get into his past.
What would open that kind of door? What kind of remarks?
If any kind of remarks saying that, when Sabrina Fulton testified, if she would have said, yes, Trayvon's been a good kid, if anything like that comes in to trial, I doubt that it might in defense, but who knows? I mean, if the defense missteps, I mean, the prosecutor missteps and opens that door and under cross-examination says, they could say under cross, you didn't even know that Trayvon had straight A's in high school. That would open the door, something like that.
Jeff, are you as concerned as I am that if this information does not come into the courtroom, that it's hard for me to see Zimmerman getting off completely if this information about Trayvon doesn't come in?
It seems like it should come in. The problem that I saw and everyone saw right at the bat is when the state opened the door themselves and then they wanted to get in about the past about Zimmerman. They opened the door themselves. And I know Mark, speaking with Mark, he says, well, if they can open the door, why can I open the door? Why can't he come in on the defense side and open the door? Let's get into Trayvon's past.
Well, let me ask you this. We know, and you've mentioned this on our show. I don't know if you mentioned this on our show, but let's go ahead and talk about it. Okay. I know we mentioned it a long time ago when we were first talking about this over a year ago. And that is that Sabrina Fulton, basically, even though she's Trayvon's biological mother, is not the woman who raised him.
That's correct.
It was his stepmother who raised him.
That's right. And in fact, his stepmother did an interview on CNN on Friday evening speaking about, she's upset because she wasn't at couldn't go to the funeral, or she was not in the first row in the courthouse, and she not testified, but she interviewed that she's the one who took Trayvon to the doctor when he was sick. She was the one who attended all his football games. She was the one who raised him. Now, she wasn't criticizing Sabrina, but she just wants everyone to know is that I raised Trayvon.
Could the defense have asked, and could they recall her to ask Sabrina Fulton, was she the woman who raised Trayvon, therefore trying to impeach her credibility when it comes to identifying Trayvon's screams?
Well, they could, but, I mean, that's very touchy area to
go in there. Well, could they call the stepmother?
Well, they could call the stepmother also to impeach her, but once again, I mean, the defense, everybody says, Marco Mira said on Friday, he's going to take a week long, he's going to call back law enforcement officers and everything, and I just don't know. I mean, I think as we all sit here right now, except for Judge Nelson, who denied the judgment of acquittal, everybody seems to agree that when you take the standard beyond a reasonable doubt, the state has not proved their case.
No.
So why would you risk going any farther? If there's any missteps by the defense, it could hurt them. And that's a school of thought that I've heard local attorneys mm-hmm. say.
Going back to this issue about the stepmom, I think what was going on, I believe it was Friday, maybe it was Thursday, when first Sabrina was on the stand, Sabrina Fulton, and then Javaris, I believe?
Yes, his brother.
Okay, his brother was on the stand.
Right.
They were both educated people, very well spoken. So I'm assuming what they were trying to do is say Trayvon would have looked like this. Tell me, how can that happen? I believe that's what they were trying to portray, so correct me if I'm wrong. If the prosecution was trying to portray that, why can't the defense say, well, no, what we need to do is find out who the stepmom is and bring it in that way? Is that just not possible?
No, they could, but as of right now, Judge Nelson's not allowing it. And she's made a pretrial ruling. She's not allowing anything to get in about Trayvon. And that's, you got to live with the rules, what they are.
All right. Well,
unless they open it up.
Unless they open it up. If there's some type of misstep, of course.
While we're speaking of family members, there was one family member who I noticed that did not testify Friday, unless I missed it, and that would be Tracy Martin, Trayvon Martin's
right.
father. He did not testify.
Right.
And do you think that that is because he has been quoted as saying when he first heard the voice on the tape that it was not Trayvon's and that the defense would have obviously brought that out? And do you think that that's why he didn't testify? And could the defense call him to bring that out?
The defense could easily call him. Once again, you don't want to misstep anything, you know, and sympathize with the jury. But you're right. Tracy Martin said that was not his son. And then the second time he came around, and once again, we know when the second time when he came around,
he had talked
there was
to Ben,
a lot of people.
Ben Crump and
exactly,
this whole crowd.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And then, you know, you got the stepmother issues that Tracy still married her, and he was in Sanford with his girlfriend. So, I mean, that's something that, you know, hasn't been brought out, but just the truth.
You're right. Yeah. And obviously the judge is not going to allow that in, and that is for sure.
Well, I think the judge would. I just don't know how much value it goes to the jury. I mean, it's fair game.
I see.
Do you want to go that far?
Right, right. There's a point that I'd like you to explain. And Lair sort of started going down this road. First of all, we know he's charged with second-degree murder. Okay.
Right.
We know that there is also, that also carries a lesser charge. The jury could decide he's not guilty of second degree murder, but he is guilty of the lesser charge of manslaughter. First of all, are there any other lesser charges, even lesser than manslaughter, that they could say they didn't even prove manslaughter, but they did prove this? Or is it just those two choices?
No, the next one lower is aggravated battery with a firearm, and that takes a special finding that the jury has to know. I mean, it sounds like a no-brainer, but they have to make a special finding that it was aggravated battery with a firearm. The next lower is aggravated battery. Then the lowest is misdemeanor battery.
So they could choose any of those five options when they go to decide this
right,
case.
And they'll have a whole list of the lesser included charges.
Okay. And do you think that the defense, one thing that I'm concerned about is that the jury says, okay, yeah, it's not second degree murder. The state didn't prove that. But they did prove something happened, so let's convict him of manslaughter. And you've told us that given the rules, sentencing rules, George would be looking at pretty much 30 years. Do you think the defense is doing enough to disprove even a manslaughter argument?
Well, I think they have. I mean, everything that under Florida law, you know, the issue they're trying to raise is that George Zimmerman made a mistake by getting out of his car. Well, that's not against the law. So we have both persons in a rightful position, and he's defending himself. So under Florida law, the strict rule, he is innocent. But I'm telling you, there's incredible pressure in that courtroom. There's,
I mean, you just, and there's pressure outside
and
that
he
courtroom.
Was, yeah, we keep forgetting, he was the community watch person.
Right.
He had a reason to be out there. He had a reason to call the police. He had a reason to be suspicious.
Carl.
Yeah, I'm so sick of hearing this argument that George Zimmerman stepped outside of, and perhaps
and
I can get you to,
trouble.
Yeah, it's not illegal. And there are two people that made two decisions. If you can argue that George Zimmerman made a wrong choice in getting out of his vehicle to go look for a street sign, then you could equally argue that Trayvon had a choice as to whether or not he wanted to hit him. So George Zimmerman didn't have to get out the car. Trayvon didn't have to hit him. Am I right about this, Jeff?
No, Carl, you're absolutely right. And don't be surprised. And in fact, I anticipated Mark O'Meara and Don West. There's a standard set of jury instructions for second-degree murder, manslaughter, and lesser charges. There's a standard jury instruction for reasonable doubt. There's a standard jury instruction about the credibility of witnesses. But there's also what's called special jury instructions. And I expect the defense is going to advocate for a special jury instruction saying that George Zimmerman getting out of his car was not a violation of the law. And that's going to, because the jurors cannot get that wrong. They got to put that aside. He did, getting out of his car was not wrong. Good. It might have been ill-advised, but it was not against the law.
Right.
Good. Okay, folks, once again, we're talking with Jeff Dowdy, obviously, about the George Zimmerman trial, which is going to be continuing first thing in the morning. 407-774-8255 is the number. That's 407-774-8255 is the number. When we come back, we'll be talking. I want to talk a little bit more about the pressure. The pressure cooker of the courtroom that Jeff started to mention here in just a few minutes when we come back from this break. Also, we're going to have our Who Said That contest in the next half hour of this show. And I think it's a quote that I guess I'm kind of sending this out to George. So you're going to want to stick around for that. We're the American Adversaries.
Absolutely, folks. And whichever way you want to go on this trial situation, let's hope that it goes by the law. And not by the raw emotion that so many people are trying to focus us in on. We are a law-abiding country, and let's see what the law says. We are the American Adversaries. Do not go away.
Back from the dressing room to re-stretch their tights, here are the champions of political professional wrestling, the American Adversary on 660 WORL and on 1520 The Biz.
Absolutely. We hope you're having a fantastic Sunday evening, folks. We certainly are here, the crew. The crew, how would you call it? The crew cabin here of the American Adversaries on a 3-hour tour. Today we're adding a special guest. That's Jeff Dowdy, who's been with us for the last couple of weeks, actually, talking about the Trayvon Martin case. He is an expert in this and one of the best attorneys around in criminal cases, and he's handled more than his share.
And feel free to join us at 407-774-8255. Jeff, I want to talk to you real briefly about something that happened in the courtroom Friday that seemed to be very unusual, and it had to do with this medical examiner, who's, I guess, is he the Seminole County medical examiner?
Volusia and Seminole share him. His office is in Volusia County by Daytona Beach.
Is he the head or lead? Or
no, he's an associate. He's an associate.
Real quickly, I presume that the defense will be calling their own autopsy expert.
Yes, they do have a medical examiner they've retained.
I understand he's the guy that wrote the book that this guy was referring to in his testimony Friday.
Ironically, that's correct.
Okay, yeah, so it'll be the guy that wrote the book, so to speak. But something happened a couple of things happened in his testimony. First of all, he changed his testimony from what he gave in his deposition.
Right.
In terms of two things that he changed his testimony in. One had to do with how long Trayvon may have lived after being shot in the chest. And the second had to do with what effect, if any, the presence of THC, in other words, marijuana, may have had on his judgment that night. In terms of the length of time Trayvon, he said, would be alive. Originally, he said 1 to 3 minutes. He changed that to 1 to 10 minutes recently, and then revealed it evidently to everyone in court on Friday. And it looked like the judge had to get a sworn testimony from the state prosecutor that he didn't know anything about it, and that's highly unusual.
Right.
And then he said that originally he said no, marijuana in his system wouldn't have had any effect on his judgment. Now he's changed it and said maybe it would. And the judge made some very, shall we say, unorthodox decisions in both of those instances.
The first one about how long he might have been alive.
Which goes to suffering.
Goes to pain and suffering. I don't know how medically he could have determined that. I mean, that had to be speculation. He gave no answer, no basis for the opinion. However, he just changed his mind. He said he went to the library, did some reading, and he changed his opinion. He testified that he met the prosecutor on July 4th in his office. And on Friday, he came in and testified. He testified in front of a judge that he does not remember whether or not he told the prosecutor, he informed him that he was going to change his opinion.
And I guess that's why the prosecutor had to swear that he did not actually tell him that he had changed his opinion.
That's correct.
Well, Jeff, help me understand this. This medical examiner was allowed to get in this pain and suffering and this length of life after a gunshot argument with the jury in there, yet Judge Deborah Nelson did not allow the defense to combat that with the jury in there. Can that be a cause for
reversal? Those two issues are highly harmful and a potentially reversible error. One, pain and suffering. When you hear the jury instructions that'll be read late when the trial ends, pain and suffering is nothing to do with the jury instructions on second-degree murder and the lesser-included charges. The only time pain and suffering comes in the penalty phase of a death penalty case. And that has to be first-degree murder, and then you're in the penalty phase.
After the person has been convicted.
After the person has been convicted, and you have two choices, life or death. And part of the death penalty being imposed, you have to weigh out the aggravating circumstances and the mitigating circumstances. Pain and suffering is part of the aggravating circumstances. It comes under what we call hack, and hack is heinous, atrocious, and cruel. And that has to do with you torturing somebody before you die, you kill them.
But nonetheless, this should not have been allowed in a court.
Right. No.
Can she do what she did when the defense had got Detective Serino to admit that he thought that George Zimmerman was being credible or something to that effect, and she read to the jury, you're to disregard. She had the court reporter reread the statement and then instructed the jury, you're to disregard this statement. Can she correct the mistake that apparently has been made by doing that?
She could offer what's called a remedial jury instruction, a curative jury instruction. I doubt that would happen now. Usually it's done spontaneous. I mean, you had the same thing when Rachel Gentile testified that she said, well, I knew that Trayvon must have been okay or his father would have came out there to help him. That was her opinion. That was her opinion based on what she just thought that what might have happened. That, to me, that was enough to open the door to his past, but it wasn't. I mean, you can always make the curative jury instruction, but it wasn't done, and so we'll see.
To me, Jeff, one of the key things in this case and the testimony, and I'm certain it's going to be brought up huge in closing arguments from the defense, is Trayvon Martin, his comment to the police officer, it was great. Did you videotape?
George Zimmerman.
You know, was it videotaped? I mean, he was willing. I hope it was videotaped. He had no problem.
He seemed relieved to find out.
He wasn't some guy that's, the videotape caught me. I'm in trouble. No, it was like, man, this will back me up. Yes, I hope it's videotaped. And to me, that's just a giant point.
Well, I've done
for his state of mind.
Yeah, I've done numerous cases with Investigator Serino, and Chris is a stand-up guy, and he's been around a long time. Believe me, when somebody's done something wrong, they're not going to be that cooperative. I mean, this was spur of the moment that he volunteered all his information. And as Chris Serino said, there was nothing in all of his statements that was significantly different. There's something to be said about that.
Absolutely.
Okay, folks, and there's something to be said about sticking around. We're going to a break. When we come back, we're going to have more with Jeff Dowdy. We're the American Adversaries. It is Sunday night. And once again, we are coming to you
live.
And we'll be right back.
Be sure to call us 407-774-8255.
The American Adversaries, where you and the president can wrestle for the truth.
We're still in this wrestling match with
Blair Adams
and
Christopher Hart, the American Adversaries on 660 WORL and on 1520 The Biz.
Okay, and we are back. That's right, folks. The American Adversary is in the middle of our three-hour tour tonight. We'll be here with you until 8 o'clock tonight, and then Mark Walters is going to take over. He'll be live with you until 11 o'clock with Armed American Radio, so make sure you stick around for that as well. And don't forget, Carl Jackson does his show live every Saturday morning from 8 to 9 a.m. And don't forget Marshall Polston, who's doing a great show live every Saturday afternoon from 2 to 3 p.m. Okay, we're going to get back to our discussion now with Jeff Dowdy. We're talking about the Zimmerman trial. Jeff is, of course, a very prominent and experienced criminal defense attorney here in Central Florida who has handled death penalty cases, even though this isn't. Obviously, his expertise in handling those cases is coming in handy in understanding what's going on here. Jeff, I want to talk to you, if we can, about the pressure, the cooker of the courtroom itself. You were talking a little bit during the break about this. First of all, if you could kind of describe the courtroom to our listeners, and then I want to talk about the what's going on inside there.
Okay. In 2004, that courthouse opened, and what you're seeing in that courtroom, that's a special courtroom. That's a ceremonial courtroom. It's made for events like swearing in of officials or things of citizens or things of that nature. But it's been used regularly. It used to be used by Judge Eaton, and he retired. But at any rate, that courtroom holds a couple hundred people. And when you see in that courtroom, that whole half of the courtroom sitting behind George Zimmerman, that's all media. When you look in the camera and you see the witnesses testifying, if you see the, you can see some pods to the right corner. So I think there's three remote cameras. They're white. And what they do, they're operated remotely. They follow people when they walk in and out of the courtroom. That those three cameras are right next to the juries. Right to the left of the jury box, there's another two large cameras, and there's also photographers. And you can't hear it, but the jury I know hears it. There's constant clicking. Clicking of pictures being taken. In the back corners, there's also other cameras back there. When somebody walks through that courtroom, a witness, and goes up to the podium to be sworn in, those cameras are all moving. They're all moving, and the jurors cannot help but see all that.
It's like paparazzi.
Yes, it is. It's in the courtroom. And now I'm sure the jurors are not seeing what's going on outside in front of the courthouse and the police presence. They're probably not seeing that because they're probably coming in through the back way, which is through the jail. So they're not probably seeing any of that, but they are definitely seeing everybody in that courtroom. And like I said, 50 to 60% of everybody in that courtroom is media. And you also know it because they all got the tags around them. And the jurors know that. And that's an incredible amount of pressure.
Mm-hmm. And certainly... Carl has brought this up before on our show, and I believe you brought it up yesterday morning, is that you believe that all this camera attention and everything is having an influence on the trial and obviously may have an influence on the outcome of the trial.
Yeah, it's intimidating. I mean, if people don't have personalities, let's face it, we're on radio because we have pretty strong personalities, and we can come on and we can give our opinions. And I don't take it for granted. I mean, there's a lot of people that will fall to media pressure. I would have no problem. I believe, even as a black man, saying I'm sorry, this case should not be in this courtroom. But I look at Judge Deborah Nelson, and I just believe that this whole situation with the medical examiner, I think she was weak. I think there's if that medical examiner is giving this new information and testifying as to pain and suffering, it's absolutely ridiculous that she wouldn't allow the defense to respond with the jury being in the courtroom. And to me, that speaks to her fear and her intimidation.
Well, look at the characters that the prosecution has brought up. You know, when it comes to the medical examiner's office, the lady from Jacksonville, Jeff, that she was talking. I mean, this lady, her background, I mean, she was dumped from her previous job. What were you telling me for?
She was washing cadavers
without
bare hands, without gloves, and washing her feet in the sink.
In the cadaver sink.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a character, folks. And she did not. I didn't think she helped the prosecution in any way, shape, or form.
Jeff, a lot of the legal talking heads on the TV are saying that judges don't like to be reversed. It appears to me, though, that Judge Deborah Nelson has decided in this case she doesn't care if she's going to be reversed or not. Do you get that feeling? And when I say reversed, that means folks are heard that the decision made in her courtroom would be overturned on appeal.
Well, no judges like to be reversed on appeal. I don't think she would ever try to intentionally reverse it. I just think that she's very, I shouldn't say pro-state. She's just ruling. Her rulings are, they're not, they should have changed. You know, the marijuana use certainly should have changed. Even though she had a pretrial ruling saying it's not going to come in, the medical examiner changes his opinion. It's a fluid situation. Change your mind. Admit that things have changed and let it in now.
Can she walk in tomorrow morning and do just that?
She could. She could. Because these judges talk to each other. There's other judges talking to her.
I'm sure.
They go back there and, you know, they always.
I'm sure somebody's told her about this problem with the pain and suffering.
Would the defense bring it up and say before the jury is brought back, could they bring this up as a motion?
They could renew it. They could renew it.
Renew the motion.
And they could renew it, and there's probably going to be, when they do what's called the charging conference, so that's when they do the jury instructions. There's probably going to be a conference on what you can and what you cannot say in closing. And I'm sure that the pain and suffering is going to be addressed because I would expect Bernie De Liriando, he's going to do the closing. Mm-hmm. And Mark's going to do the closing for the defense. And the reason I say that, just from experience, you always have a different one because the first one throws everything up they can on opening and the closer tries to bring everything in. And you're going to see two contrasting styles, but I'm sure there's going to be a conference during the charging conference, what you can and cannot say. And that marijuana use is going to be a tricky one, and so is this pain and suffering. And if this pain and suffering is allowed to be in closing, it's done.
All right, let's go to Al from Orlando, who would like to make a comment about this trial. After we get finished with Al, we're going to do our Who Said That contest. Al, thank you for calling, and we appreciate you being out there.
Yes, sir. Thank you. This question is for the jail, the lawyer, I guess.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Zimmerman will be found guilty for manslaughter due to negligence. Correct, sir?
If that's your question, okay.
Negligence. If he's found guilty, if it's negligence, and that's the issue that you're saying he's found guilty of, that would be a manslaughter charge, and he can get tagged for a lot of time with the manslaughter charge.
30 years with a gun.
Yes.
All right. Good.
All right. Well, I suppose that's what you're looking for. I appreciate you calling there, Al. As Jeff pointed out in a couple of segments ago in our show, there are actually five charges. One of which, or could there even be a combination of charges that he is convicted of?
They only got to pick one of those. They're all included in the same category.
All right. Well, just for Al's benefit and other people who didn't hear it, what are the five charges, one of which he could be convicted of?
Second degree murder, manslaughter, aggravated battery with a firearm. That would take a special finding, aggravated battery, and all the way down to battery, a misdemeanor.
Okay. All right.
I want to just say this, too. Al called yesterday, and this isn't in response to Al, but I think it's important for people to understand this. And I don't say this lightly, but if what George Zimmerman says is true was happening to him about his head being bashed on concrete, I'm a concealed weapons carrier. If that were me, I would have shot Trayvon. And I don't say that lightly, and I don't say that to try to be to score points. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying if I feel like my life is in imminent danger, and for those of you, I have some knowledge of MMA. So here's the fact of the matter. If George Zimmerman knows some level of MMA, and another guy knows some level of MMA, and that guy, the other guy that knows or has some level or skill of MMA, mounts you, it's not fair or correct to say, well, George Zimmerman knows MMA, so he should have been able. No. The MMA community understands that if someone is more skilled in MMA or Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu or one of these Muay Thai kickboxing, they can kill you. And one of the things that they teach you is your brain is loose. Your brain is loose inside of your head.
Well, it
can cause damage.
It doesn't even have to get that deep, though, does it?
No, it absolutely doesn't.
Didn't Alexis Carter, the one of George Zimmerman's teacher, basically say in court that a self-defense you know, can be implemented within, in other words, it can become a self-defense situation within a matter of seconds.
You don't even have
moments.
To be struck.
So it almost didn't matter how they got on the ground, what led up to them being on the ground.
Exactly.
The fact that they were on the ground and that Trayvon Martin had the upper hand, that there was a gun there and Zimmerman was in true fear of his life, did that not make it a self-defense?
That is self-defense. I mean, I've heard some people, and it's just ludicrous to me, that he should have taken his beating. Please.
Yeah. You know, where does it stop?
Yeah.
And if Trayvon had pulled his gun and shot him, would that have been a better result?
Well, see, and Chris, back to your point, that doesn't even matter. I guess I made a point yesterday on the radio. If you think of a dartboard, if you think of a target, all this other stuff going on, whatever, it doesn't matter. What it comes down to is the altercation, and correct me if I'm wrong, Jeff, at the time of that altercation, did George Zimmerman feel like his life was in imminent danger? And at that point, that's where you have justifiable homicide, just within that target. All this other stuff, he got out of the car, Trayvon hit him, Trayvon shouldn't have hit him either, but the fact of the matter is, when that gun was shot, at that point in time, did George Zimmerman legally feel like, or feel as though his life was in imminent danger?
And that's
all that matters.
And shouldn't the judge have limited testimony to just that?
There will be instructions on that. That it could happen in a matter of moments. That's when they talk about premeditation. Premeditation can happen in 2 seconds.
Well, and Carl, to your point, Carl, if you had killed Trayvon Martin, this wouldn't have gone to trial.
Yeah, You know what?
I'm serious.
This is sad to say, but this is something that I have discussed with some friends.
I don't know that that's the case.
Yeah, well, this is strictly my opinion. So I'm just going to say I want to make it clear, this is my opinion. But I feel as if George Zimmerman were black, or if he had a black wife, this would not be in court. This is strictly my opinion. This is just strictly my opinion.
That's my point.
I just say this based on the politics that has come into this case and the race baiters like Sharpton and the like. Because we know for a fact that blacks are being murdered in L.A., Detroit, Chicago on a daily basis, and we don't hear a freaking word.
Well, that's pretty much the case. Most black men, young men, are killed by other black young men.
Hey, black on black crime doesn't sell.
All right. Well, listen, it's time now for our Who Said That contest. Once again, folks, we're going to have Jeff until the top of the hour. So if you'd like to call and ask him a question or make an observation about this case, 407-774-8255 is the number. 407-774-8255 is the number. You know, I've been trying to see this from the people that were involved that night as perspective. One is Trayvon Martin. The other is, of course, George Zimmerman. And I think that, both men were victimized that night by circumstances, if you will. And certainly Trayvon is no longer alive, so he paid the ultimate price. But I believe that George Zimmerman has also paid a extremely high price. He's looking at 30 years or more in prison. And even if he is acquitted, you cannot think that his life is ever going to be what it might have been had this all not happened. So I try to find words of inspiration or wisdom in cases like this, and so I stumbled across this the other day. So for our Who Said That quote tonight, you're going to have to tell me who said this, and you'll win a $20 gift card to Cafe Positano. We thank Cafe Positano for being a longtime sponsor of our show, and we want to thank everybody who goes there to support Cafe Positano. And you'll also win an American Adversaries T-shirt. All you have to do is call us up and tell us who said, and I quote, "I might have been given a bad break, but I have an awful lot to live for." Who said that? "I might have been given a bad break, but I have an awful lot to live for." If you know who said that, 407-774-8255 is the number. You regular culprits out there who know all of our quotes, I want you to hold off. Let's see if we can get somebody new in here. And if you've won something in the last few weeks, we'd also like you to hold back and let somebody else win. "I might have been given a bad break, but I have an awful lot to live for." If you know who said that, 407-774-8255.
Of course, we are the American Adversaries. You'll find us Monday through Friday, 5 to 6 o'clock. And on Sunday nights, 5 to 8. We'll be right back in a few minutes. If you have any questions, be sure to give us a call.
More political mayhem is on the way. You're listening to The American Adversaries on 660 WORL. If you can take it.
Okay, welcome back, folks. You are listening to The American Adversaries, and we are wrapping up this second hour of our three-hour tour tonight. We have Lair Adams and me, Christopher Hart, here in the studio with you, along with our executive producer, Nostra Dennis, Carl Jackson, Johnny Guns, Jeff Dowdy, and Tyler Israel, and Jeff Sinis.
And look who walked in.
In the other room, and our man, Joe Terp, is also here tonight, too. So we got a full gang here. Want to welcome you to our show, and if you'd like to call, 407-774-8255 is the number. I'm just trying to send some words of encouragement out there to anybody who needs them, in particular, say, George Zimmerman tonight. So for our Who Said That contest, I picked the quote, "I might have been given a bad break, but I have an awful lot to live for." And we have a couple of callers on the line who think they know who said that. So let's go first to George from Apopka, who got through first with his answer. George, thank you for calling tonight.
Thanks very much for asking. Yeah, that quote was by Lou Gehrig. And as a matter of fact, it was almost 74 years ago, July 4th, 1939, he made that speech at Yankee Stadium when he was dying. Yep. And that's part of his speech, that he's got an awful lot to live for, even though he was given a bad break. And so it was almost 74 years ago to the day.
That's right. He said it on July 4th in Yankee Stadium. And a lot of people recognize what he said just prior to this. He said, of course, I consider myself the luckiest man in the world.
On the face of the earth.
On the face of the earth, that's right.
And as a matter of fact, that movie is on tonight on the baseball channel.
Oh, wow, that's cool. And then after he said that, that's when he said, I might have been given a bad break, but I have an awful lot to live for. You're absolutely correct, George.
Yes.
Thank you for calling. Have you ever been to Cafe Positano right here on the east side of Apopka?
No, I haven't.
All right. Well, you're going to get a $20 gift card to Cafe Positano. If you like Italian food, I'm sure you're going to like you're going to like going there.
And, okay.
And make sure you give Jeff your shirt size so that we can get you an American Adversaries T-shirt as well. I'm picking up a new batch of them tomorrow, so I'll get that right out to you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, George, for calling. And by the way, did you have any other comments you'd like to make before we let you go?
Lou Gehrig was a great ball player, and if he didn't have that disease, which was named after him, there's no telling what kind of records he would have set. As a matter of fact, even the year 1927, when Babe Ruth hit 60 home runs, Lou Gehrig had more RBIs.
Yep, he was.
So Lou Gehrig was an RBI machine, and
sweet.
You know, if he lived a normal life, he would have set records that nobody else could have ever touched.
Didn't they actually call him Sweet Lou because he had such a sweet swing or something like that?
No, they called him the Iron Man.
The Iron Man, that's right.
Because he played in over 2,000 consecutive games until Cal Ripken broke his record.
That's and he right. did that without steroids.
Yeah, imagine
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, you know, it's unbelievable. You know, yeah. Lou Gehrig had 7 years where he had over 150 RBIs.
Yeah.
So he was one of the best RBI men in baseball history.
Ever.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, George, thanks again. We appreciate you being out there, and
yeah.
Make sure you give that information to Jeff.
Okay.
All right, and speaking of Jeff, Jeff Dowdy, you knew the answer to that, too, right away, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I'm a baseball fanatic.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm a Tiger fan.
Okay. All right. Rick called. He also had the right answer. George got through first. Rick, if you want to hold on the line and speak to Jeff, we'll do that. But Lon had called before either one of you guys and wanted to talk about this trial with us. Lon from Maitland, thank you for calling this evening. Your comments, please.
Hey, Chris. Thanks to you and crew for another good show.
Thanks.
The question I've got, the lead up to it is, seems there's a lot been made in this trial about the threat on Zimmerman's life and whether or not his life was being threatened, and prosecution tried to make or cast some doubt on that. But the law, the way I understand it, says you can use deadly force in defense if you believe there's an imminent threat to your life or great bodily harm.
Right.
I believe probably Zimmerman could believe his very life was threatened, but certainly I think he would fear for great bodily harm. The question is, Jeff, I think you would know best, what is the definition legally of great bodily harm?
All right. Thank you, Lon. We appreciate it. Jeff?
Thank you.
Great bodily harm is that is the definition.
How about a broken nose?
Well, I mean, that could be great bodily harm, but it's more, in effect, if you fear, in your mind, you fear that somebody's going to hurt you bad. I mean, that's all I can say. It's a straightforward thing. It's great bodily harm. It is what it is. If you are in fear that you are going to take a beating, and I'll just use the street language, if you're going to take a beating, that is in the fear of great bodily harm. It's a subjective state of mind. I mean, you got to weigh in. The different sizes of the people, that weighs in, too. I mean, and people have to realize that. I mean, if I had one of your wrestler friends come after me, I mean, I'd be in fear of my great bodily harm, too. But, I mean, it's all a state of mind. And when you have a smaller a female, a larger male, I mean, it does not take much for her to be in fear of her life.
Okay, Lon,
I'm scared to death of a bloody nose, and a big guy is, you know, pounding me and about to land one square on my nose, and I've been scared of that since I was 7 years old. Can I shoot him?
If it's imminent, now you got to go into is it imminent? I mean, are you taking a beating, or are you getting hit, or are you afraid right then?
Yeah, I'm getting beat.
Yes, then legally by that definition, you can use whatever force is necessary.
All right,
whatever force is necessary. Now you got to remember that.
Thank you, Lon. We appreciate it.
What about a woman who fears she's going to be raped?
Well, that's, I mean,
is that considered great bodily harm?
Yes. Yes. It's a subjective state of mind.
Okay. Let me ask you this, that we now know basically that there are a core set of facts in this case. The target of the dartboard, as Carl puts it, that basically what the case should be being decided over. Okay. Was it self-defense? And that last few seconds basically would be determinant of that. Having said that, though, is it quite possible that the prosecution has actually presented a pretty decent case and given this jury ample evidence to bring back a conviction?
I don't think they presented enough evidence. I mean, I think they presented enough evidence for the defense to say that Zimmerman was taking a beating, as Professor Carter said.
All right, let me rephrase the question. Is it quite possible with, let's say, the unwitting assistance of the judge, that the prosecution has presented an emotional enough argument that it could persuade the jury regardless of the facts?
Well, that's another question. I mean, that's the jury, that's ignore
the facts?
That's my biggest fear. I mean, not mine. It's probably George Zimmerman's biggest fear.
That's my
facts are going to be ignored here.
Well, that's my fear as well.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm expressing here. And Carl's talked about, we've talked about all these outside influences coming now to a head in this case. And what I'm afraid of is what I call the O.J. Simpson syndrome, where all the outside influences overshadow the facts. I mean, O.J. Simpson couldn't have been proven more guilty. And it seems to me George Zimmerman could not have been proven more innocent. And yet the wrong verdict could easily come down.
In O.J.'s case, it was the LAPD that was on trial. I don't see that. As you've seen in this trial, Sanford did a good job. I mean, it was when outside forces, outside political forces came in. That's where the arrest came from.
All right. We have to go to a hard break. Jeff, can I ask you a favor and stay over a few minutes into the next hour?
Sure.
Because we have Tim on the line, and I know we all have another question or two.
Okay.
So when we come back, it'll be a little bit more of Jeff Dowdy on the George Zimmerman trial.
That's right. Hour number three of the American Adversary Sunday Night Edition is heading your way.
When America fell into darkness, a call rang out across the land. Blair Adams, entertainer and entrepreneur, answered the call. He joined forces with friend, businessman, and scholar, Christopher Hart. They teamed with lifelong radio pro Nostradamus. Together, they are guardians of liberty and the American way.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, Blair Adams, Nostradamus, Johnny Guns, and Christopher Hart, the American Adversaries.
Oh, Tyler Israel, can you get that webcam up and going? I can't believe what I'm seeing here in the third hour of American Adversaries Classic. Johnny Guns is illuminating the ground and pound technique. He's got Jeff Dowdy in a headlock.
Help!
Carl Jackson's jumping in. Lair and Chris are coming over the side ropes. It's a battle royale! I'm Nostra Dennis, and all the guys are here, and we are talking with Attorney Jeff Dowdy about the Zimmerman case, and we continue to get phone calls. It's just a hot topic. People want to know. Let's go right to line two. Tim from Castleberry has a question for Jeff about the trial.
Hey, thanks, Tim, and thanks for the treats you dropped off.
Oh, you're welcome. I just wanted to give you a little raspberry today.
Are you are you down at Cafe Positano by any chance?
Yes, I am at my reserve table.
All right. Excellent.
And when I told him Jeff was on the program, he jumped in his car and took off to go listen.
Oh, thank you.
I think he didn't have any pizzas with him.
I was going to say, doggone. All right. Okay.
So listen, but again, I just want to thank Jeff for his input on this and being on your program because it really brings a lot of light to the.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you very much.
And it just tells us a little bit more about the hidden truths of what goes on in the courtroom that, you know, stuff that we wouldn't notice or wouldn't see. So,
well, we appreciate that, Tim. Did you have any specific questions for Jeff?
No.
All right. Just, well, thank you.
How much I appreciate the information that he brings.
Well, right. Thanks, Tim.
Yeah, because there are places on the dial where they have 8 hours of uninterrupted live feeds from the courtroom, and you get more listening to Jeff 5 minutes on the American Adversaries. You can get more distilled down reality than you can from all this testimony.
And you hear echoes of what Jeff says on our show later on that night or later on during the week. So we are very proud and feel very privileged that Jeff has agreed to be on our show and lend his expertise to our audience.
Thanks, guys.
Well, As I work Tuesday through Saturday, I'm surrounded by 7 or 8 TVs, but I don't get a chance to watch. So,
well, you're better off. Just listen to us, and you'll be way ahead of the game.
I am. I truly am.
Thanks, and we know
again,
you do.
And enjoy your day.
And Tim, thank you for sponsoring helping our sponsor Cafe Positano by visiting his restaurant.
And did he bring the cookies?
But it's good food.
It dang sure is. Mm-hmm.
And so are these cookies.
Definitely. Thank you, Tim. We'll talk to you soon.
Yep, you bet. Okay,
now let's go to Rick from Orlando. Thank you for calling, Rick, and your question for Jeff Dowdy.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Rick.
My question is, ever since this whole thing started, my impression has been that everybody's looking for a verdict instead of justice. I wanted to know what you thought about that.
Good question, Jeff. He says he feels that everybody's looking for a verdict. In other words, their decision, what they want it to be, rather than justice per se.
Well, everybody has their opinion. It depends on what, you know, a lot of people. I was reading an article today from an Orlando columnist who said, you know, it's about gun rights, you know, whether or not you believe people should have guns or not. So other people think it's race. I don't think it's about that at all. And it might be about gun rights. Some people don't think that you should be carrying a gun, and it might come to that. But the general consensus out there that, you know, they want a verdict, and they're kind of setting aside the facts and the rule of law, and it's more the spirit of the law is what everybody's looking for.
Right. I think you're...
That's been my biggest fear in this whole thing, because as soon as I saw Sharpton and Jesse Jackson come down here and jump on this thing, I knew we were in trouble.
No, we're in trouble, and I knew it too. And Jeff Triplett, the mayor of Sanford, is a very good friend of mine, and he was just overwhelmed. I mean, it just spun out of control. And I was talking with the Sanford City Commissioner yesterday about it, and they had no idea that this sort of thing, everybody would just rain upon Sanford, and it's really hurt the city. And it's a great city.
They all come there, and they do their dirty work, and then they leave.
And you have to remember, too, and we pointed this out. I'm so proud of our coverage, because a lot of the things that we talked about before have been played out. One of the things that we talked about when Sharpton and Jackson and all of them were first coming down here was, don't forget, folks, what year this is. This is an election year. We have a black president who has a black constituency who wasn't so, you know, jazzed up. They needed something to get the black community, if you will, excited. And this is how they chose to do it. That's why Barack Obama said that Trayvon would look like his son if he were his, whatever he said. Right. The whole idea was to make this part of the campaign. And you're so very right. Justice kind of gets lost in the sauce. And now we see that playing out in the end game here. And by the way, I think, Jeff, you were referring to Scott Maxwell's article in the Orlando Sentinel today, where he basically says that people are going to see in this what they want to see. In other words, if you thought Trayvon is innocent, you obviously have seen enough to prove to you that Trayvon was innocent.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
And if you wanted to believe that Zimmerman was innocent, yeah, you've seen enough to prove to you that. So, but certainly that's a statement about human nature in general. The problem here is that it was politicized and it was taken to that next level. It did get out of hand, as the mayor was expressing to Jeff.
Oh, and my whole impression of the entire trial up to this point is that the prosecution has put on a great defense.
Well, there's a couple of schools of thought on that. You're right, Rick. The school of thought is that for the L. Sharpton and everyone out there, the prosecution is going to say, this is what we had. We let it all out. We're transparent. And the jury decided. On the other side is, you know, it's a school of law. I mean, we have to prosecute this case, but then they're not doing a very good job of it. So it's
well, if it weren't for this judge, I mean, you would think that this is open and shut in George's favor. But with this judge and her decisions and what she is being allowing this jury to hear and not to hear, it makes me extremely concerned. And it also makes me believe that the state, and when I say the state, I mean, let's say, the federal government, the state of Florida, beyond the prosecutorial state, would just as soon see George Zimmerman get a conviction. Because they know that us white folks, Carl Jackson excluded here, we aren't going to go out and riot, okay?
It'd be a lot less to clean up with a guilty verdict.
But if George Zimmerman skates entirely free, I think they are more worried about the social consequences of that than any justice being paid
the
to
backlash.
George Zimmerman. And that's what I fear here. Go ahead.
My impression on this thing is that they want the conviction, because they know that once it goes to appeal, it'll get overturned, and that will leave Sanford and all these people out of it.
It basically, by that time, everything will have calmed down.
Except for George.
Right.
In the meantime, where do you riot?
Exactly. And that's what we've been arguing against from the very start here, that George Zimmerman be thrown under the bus for some sort of greater good. You know, it sounds to me like utilitarian politics. Do you guys understand utilitarianism is? Utilitarianism was proposed by or expounded by John Stuart Mill. Utilitarianism is the greatest good for the greatest number. So if it takes throwing George Zimmerman under the bus to bring about the greatest good in the eyes of the state, well, then why not do it? The only problem is that is not a just thing to have happened. Well, Rick, thank you for calling. We appreciate
Thanks,
Jeff.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Well, the first person I was throwing under the bus was Chief Bill Lee of Sanford. He was chief of police, and he lost his job.
Yeah,
and now we know that the Sanford Police Department did their job.
They did nothing wrong.
And as a matter of fact, we touted that back at the time, too, that the man was fired basically for doing a good job. You know, it is just so topsy-turvy in this case. It has me extremely concerned of the outcome. Now, Jeff, do you think, after talking with Mark O'Mara, that the defense is going to take the rest of this week, or will it happen in a couple of days, or are you just not sure?
I'm not sure. As of Friday, Mark was saying he was going to put law enforcement back on. He was going to put Robert on and, you know, other family members. I just don't know. I mean, as a matter of law, they have not proved their case beyond a reasonable doubt. And you stop by your head. It's like you keep rolling the dice. I mean, it's there. We have enough, but who knows?
In other words, you're saying the state has not proved their case.
They've not proved their case. I mean,
this doesn't really help the argument here, gentlemen, too, because I do know this. I talked to a gentleman the other day with one of the gun ranges, gun shops around town, about the number of concealed weapons classes, the people that are signing up. The number's increasing. So we're having a situation here where we're trying to prove what standing your ground or protecting yourself is. And we're having people that on both sides that are getting scared of this. Now, well, this isn't going to get...
Yeah, but you can't dissociate what's happening with that with guns from gun sales. In other words, I think that has a lot more to do with
Barack
Obama.
The people he talks to has said certain things. This is concealed weapons.
All right.
Which George had.
Go ahead, what you were saying about the trial, I mean, I think the jury's has heard enough. And I got some indications from that last week, as I was saying off the break. On Wednesday, Judge Nelson said, we're going to work on Fridays. And that surprised everybody. She must, you know, she doesn't interact with the jury, but she's a lot closer to them than any of us are, or the defense or prosecution. Then on Friday, when the state rested at 5:17, she made the defense go, which is highly, highly unusual. And she asked the jurors, would you like to go? And they said, yes. Think about that. On a Friday at 5:17, the jurors wanted to keep going and hearing testimony. That tells me that this jury is ready for this case to move forward.
Now, Jeff, at this point in this case, if the jury deliberations start, what do longer deliberations mean? Do they...
You don't know.
That could go either way.
I've had a murder trial last 15 minutes, and I've had a jury once out for 5 business days. But what you're going to see, though, the longer the defense goes on, what the prosecution can do, it's what's called rebuttal. That's going to prolong the trial. And then you have the rarely used surrebuttal. And that's rare. I mean, you're getting down, you know, into a funnel here.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you a similar question. You sounded like you were – it sounded as if you were saying Mark O'Mara has to be careful, or the defense has to be careful as to not drag this case on and hurt themselves.
Right, and don't make any missteps. If we stop, I would be perfectly comfortable if I'm in charge of George Zimmerman's defense and say, ladies, your honor, we rest. We're ready for closings. Wow. But that's my opinion. I mean, but...
And you would never put George on the stand?
Well, if you had asked me a week ago, I'd said he has to because the jurors want to hear it. But they've heard him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They've heard his stories. So why? Why would you put him on now? There's nothing to put on. Mm-hmm. You know, so... But if you'd have asked me without that video, I'd say you better put him on because he's charged with first-degree murder, and he's got to tell his story. He's told it.
But, Jeff, what about the concern that Zimmerman on the Hannity interview, supposedly they believe he lied as far as stand your ground, even though I think the terminology was different that was being used in the classroom?
That's something they might come up with in the defense. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. My understanding is the professors, though, said they weren't sure that he even attended that class
right.
that day that it was there. So that,
right.
that has not been proven.
Yeah.
Well, and the silly part of it is, gentlemen, we're talking seconds that night. I can't imagine stand your ground was going through George Zimmerman's mind at any moment during this altercation.
Well, yeah.
And in the end, as Carl said, it all comes down to the heart of the target, you know, the very center of the target, and that is what happened in that 30 to 60 seconds that led up to the gunshot.
Yeah.
And really, that is what the case should be turning on, isn't it, Jeff?
Yes.
And
yes.
It's so frustrating, guys, because I hear all of these people chiming in, well, George wasn't injured enough, or he could have done this, or he could have done that. But it's so funny. Unfortunately, I have been in situations where I've been the victim of 2 violent crimes. You don't have time to think. But ironically, your brain slows down, and this is my experience, where I was able to remember. I could tell you details of those crimes. But I can tell you when things happen in a split second, you can't sit on the sideline and tell me what you would do because you do not No.
Yeah, for any
that's a very good point. I mean, that's a very good point.
For any of those people, including that medical examiner from Jacksonville, who thinks that those injuries were insignificant, they should have somebody at the size and weight of Trayvon Martin punch him in the nose, knock him to the ground, and pound their head into the ground a few times, and then see what they think.
Yeah, I've been hit in the face, guys. Your first reaction is, I'm going to stop you
from doing that again.
Exactly.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, please, please, please pray for justice in this case. Pray that justice be done and that all these political considerations be washed aside and that jury do the right thing when they decide this case. Please pray for that tonight and tomorrow and the rest of this case. We'll be right back.
Hey, folks, this is pro wrestler and WWE Hall of Famer Hacksaw Jim Duggan, and I listen to the American Adversaries on News Talk 660, WORL. tough guy.
Okay, we're back, folks. We're the American Adversaries, and we are live. 407-774-8255 is the number. We'll be here until 8 o'clock, at what time we're going to hand off the baton, if you will, to Mark Walters, and he'll be here live with you until 11 o'clock with his show, Armed American Radio. And I wouldn't be surprised if he's talking about the Zimmerman trial tonight as well. Jeff Dowdy has agreed to stay with us at least until the bottom of the hour. So if you have any more questions for Jeff, feel free to call at 407-774-8255. In the meantime, get ready to dial that number because it's time for our Roxy Pacifics giveaway. That's right, folks. Roxy Pacifics is a great new product. It's a totally
natural
product. That's right. It's a kelp water with a certain concentration of kelp and other chemicals that are harmless, no side effects, and it can be used for all kinds of skin irritations or problems, everything from a mosquito bite up to melanoma. So, and children can use it. You can use it on your pets. And Ed Roxy of Roxy Pacifics has agreed to give away a bottle of on our Sunday night shows. So if you're the first caller right now at 407-774-8255, you'll get a free bottle of Roxy Pacifics. And if you'd like to buy a bottle, you go to roxypacifics.net. That's R-O-C-Z-E-Y, Pacifics with an X. .net.
He even told us last week, Chris, that he himself uses it as a mouthwash for any type of mouth problems or ailments or whatever.
Yeah, absolutely.
Any part of your skin, too, folks, you or your animals.
That's right. So Roxy Pacifics and 407-774-8255 to the first caller. Jeff Dowdy, you've tried many a case. You would be defending a defendant like George Zimmerman.
Absolutely.
Would you rest your case at this point, or would you venture forward and try to present more testimony?
If it was me, I would announce tomorrow to the judge I'm ready for closing arguments, the defense rest. The more you bring it out, I still think the jurors have heard enough. By the law, they've not proven their case. Why take any more chances?
And you said that the judge asked the jury Friday afternoon if they wanted to go on with the trial, and they said yes.
Yes, and that was at 5:17, and this is after the state has arrested. This is after the judgment of acquittal arguments. This is the defense starting their case. Typically, 99.99%, it would have started Monday morning. But the jurors wanted to go on, and I'm hoping that Mark and Don took note of that.
In your experience, would that tell you that the jury has already made up their minds?
I don't know if the jury's made up their minds, but I think the jury has heard enough evidence that they want to talk. You got to remember, the jurors have not talked about the case at all amongst themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody, as we sit in this room, has their own separate note-taking, mental note-taking, and literal note-taking. They have not discussed the case. Once they get into the room, they can put their collective notes together and talk about it. They've not done that yet. I'm thinking, from their indication that they wanted to go forward Friday evening at 5:17 p.m., is that their notebook is full. They're ready to discuss this trial.
How late did that go Friday night, Jeff?
It went to just about 6 o'clock.
Hmm.
The jury, I've sat on a couple of juries, but it's been a while, so I don't remember. Has the jury picked a foreman yet?
No. That's the first thing you do when the judge...
That's right. When you go for deliberations.
Very first thing, they'll pick a foreperson. And we've only lost one alternate, so we still have, three alternates, so we haven't lost anyone.
And they'd all be part of the deliberations, all the alternates?
No. The alternates are released. No.
They're released, but for the fact, in a case like this, they will remain sequestered in case somebody...
A jury dies or whatever.
In the jury room, yes. You never know. But it'll be interesting to see... If you could watch the jurors' face when they announce the alternates. Some people, you'll see, oh, my gosh, I'm so glad. Other people will say, oh, man.
I wish I'd been.
Right.
George Zimmerman, his face has been pretty stoic throughout this whole trial. But it seems to me that you could tell he was getting a little nervous. Now, this goes to the semantics in the courtroom. And I'm not saying he would try to play this up. But would it benefit him to go ahead and release some of those emotions? I mean, I could tell he was holding back when his mother and stuff like and his family members got on the...
Right, and some people, you want to show some emotion. I've heard people that have criticized Sabrina Fulton, but saying she didn't show enough emotion. She was too stoic up there.
And I was surprised when the prosecutor asked her whose voice it was. She said it was Trayvon Benjamin Marcus.
Yes, yes.
I was.
She was not my son.
You weren't?
I was surprised, I'm sorry. I was surprised, to Chris's point, that she didn't get really emotional. But I have to admit, later when I thought about it, I thought that she was still very, very effective.
I think both mothers were credible. And so in that sense, I think both mothers' testimony in the jury isn't going to really mean a hill of beans, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and I personally met Mrs. Zimmerman. She's a frail little lady.
Yeah.
She's
Let me ask you this. There's one other possibility that will happen, and we've mentioned this briefly in the past. I want to mention it again. Hung jury. Do you think that there's a good possibility that we'll have a hung jury here?
There's a better than most. I mean, it's hard. You always say in a first-degree murder case you have 12. It's hard to get 12 people to agree. In the penalty phase, it only takes a majority vote. But you have to have six people agree. It's not as difficult, but in something like this, this is a close call. And you got to get people that are going to be steadfast in their opinions. They swore to you that they're going to be fair and impartial. They're not going to hold to their opinion.
If you get one on either side that's dug in, it could take a long time.
Yeah. You've seen the movie 12 Angry Men.
Right, yeah. Okay, congratulations to Rick, who won Roxy Pacifics, and we'll be doing that again next week. Roxy Pacifics is a great skin treatment for just about anything that ails you, and no side effects, and kids can use it repeatedly, and you can use it on your pets. Roxy Pacifics.
Sunburn, eczema, psoriasis.
Listen for his commercials on our program. Ed Roxy and Roxy Pacifics is a new sponsor. We appreciate them. We appreciate you folks as well. We appreciate Jeff Dowdy sticking around and talking about this trial, and once again, he'll be with us each day this week and next Sunday. We'll be right back.
Okay.
The battle is heating up. You're listening to The American Adversaries on 660 WORL and on 1520 The Biz. If you can take it.
You're listening to The American Adversaries live this Sunday evening on News Talk 660 WORL. I am Carl Jackson, sitting in studio with Nostra Dennis, Christopher Hart, Lair Adams. We got Tyler Israel. We got Jeff Sennis. And we got the man with the master plan.
Who's that?
The man. Well, you know who it is, man. Come on.
No, just lying.
We got the man with the WTF news. And WTF doesn't stand for what you think. It stands for
Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
You lost me for a second there.
He didn't pick up on that cue too well.
I was waiting to see who you were talking about. That was a big intro there.
Man, my bad.
I was excited. Then I found out you're talking about me, and now I'm disappointed. All right. On July 4th in Quincy, Illinois, they were singing about the rocket's red glare, bombs bursting in air, and halfway through the night, a teenager's derriere. 19-year-old Stephen Miller allegedly had too much fun on his 4th, at least too much fun to operate a motor vehicle, that is. But that didn't stop the tanked teen from getting behind the wheel. According to police, Miller's 2006 Chevy Cobalt struck the back of a parked pickup truck and flipped over. Miller seemed to be unharmed and attempted to flee when police showed up on the scene. Apparently, Miller must have thought his clothes were weighing him down because he created his own clothing malfunction, streaking in the city street. Miller received minor cuts from fleeing police and was charged with, need a breath for this, DUI, leaving the scene of a property damage accident, resisting a police officer, improper lane usage, driving with a suspended license, and having a body type that no one ever wants to see naked in public.
Jeez.
I think that last one was a stretch.
DUI, is that driving under itty-bitty things?
Send your complaint emails to Lair Adams at
AmericanAdversariesRadio.com.
Story number two also deals with an accident and things no one wants to see in public. A driver in Russia got into, an exotic erotic accident, and it was all caught on dashboard cam. You see, in Russia, dashboard cams are common in automobiles and catch everything from road rage fights to bovine love. Yes, Andrei Kovarov was driving down the road when two cows decided to do what married cows do. However, the love that they made carried them into the path of Kovarov's car. The female cow was struck, rolled up the hood, and smashed into the windshield. As the car stopped, the cow slid off the car, back into the street, and walked away seemingly unharmed. Then the male cow strutted safely across the street after his woman. So much for chivalry, right, guys? Aren't you supposed to push your woman out of the way of harm? But can you just imagine Mr. Komarov's call to the insurance agency on Monday morning?
Isn't there a phrase for that? Something about
Johnny.
Something about interrupt us?
That was utterly unbelievable.
That was couch us. Yes, it is couch us. Interrupt us.
I'm moving.
All right, well, let's end tonight.
He hooked it out of
let's
here.
End tonight with a wedding story, shall we? Because I love weddings. Dateline France.
Those cows are horny.
Good vibrations led one smitten woman to marry a bridge. Wait a second. One smitten. I really need to start proofreading these stories. Australian artist Jody Rose, who travels the world recording the vibrations of bridge cables for her Singing Bridges music project, knew it was love at first sight with the 600-year-old French bridge, Le Pont des Dibouls. On her not-so-traditional wedding day, the beaming bride wore an ivory dress in a ceremony witnessed by 14 guests. Though this union is not recognized in France, she says it's just as strong as any other marriage, writing, quote, "He is everything I could desire in a husband. Sturdy, trustworthy, sensual, kind, and handsome," unquote. Not to mention faithful, which I'm sure the new Miss Le Pont des Dibouls will be as well. Quote, "He understands that I love other bridges and men," unquote. She went on to write more about her bridge. She went on to write more about her bridge bow in a blog entry saying, "The story of our romance is a modern love fable. He felt my vibrations coming near her. He drew me to him. Although he is made of stone, the resonance of his being is very present, and I feel at peace in his strong embrace. He makes me feel connected to the earth and draws me to rest from my endless nomadic wanderings," which I'm sorry, guys, that sounds like the weirdest Hallmark card ever.
Like a bridge over troubled waters.
Help us, Lord, help us. That's some WTF news from Johnny Guns. I've got a little...
She was kept in suspension.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, we knew when the Supreme Court made these decisions about DOMA and Prop 8 that it was going to open the door to this sort of thing, so we should not be surprised.
Hmm. Yeah.
If you can marry a man, marry a bridge.
Okay, where did the bridge go to college? Tulane.
No. I thought it was Bridgeport.
The bridge was the editor of the Harvard Law Review. Okay. There's also a WTF news story that I got out of the Orlando Sentinel from Tuesday of June 25th. Boy, I'm taking a long time to get to this stuff. And I know it doesn't necessarily qualify as a WTF news story, but I thought what was so unusual about it wasn't necessarily the story, because we've been hearing things like this, but the fact that it would show up in the Orlando Sentinel. Let me read you the little story. It's only
a warm up.
Two short paragraphs. 6-year-old wins right to use girls' bathroom. Dateline, Colorado Springs, Colorado. The Colorado.
I used to live there.
The Colorado Civil Rights. The Colorado Civil Rights Division has ruled in favor of a 6-year-old whose school barred. And I'm going to use the words in the article here. Barred her from using the girls' bathroom because she is transgender. Coy Mathis was born with male genitals. Now, when I was a kid, that means you were a boy. Okay, but anyway.
Just male genitals.
Coy Mathis was born with male genitals, but as soon as she was able to express herself, it became clear to her parents that she thought of herself as a girl. Mathis' parents filed a complaint with the state civil rights agency after Coy was denied access to the girls' bathroom at her school in Fountain. Now, let me just say that I think that Coy should be allowed to go to the bathroom at school. Not in the girls' bathroom, not in the boys' bathroom, in his own bathroom. And if that means that all the bathrooms at the school must be made to be used by one person at a time, then so be it. Because the little boy should not be allowed to use the little girl's room while little girls are in there. I'm sorry. I don't care what he or his parents think that he is.
That's the whole key to it. It's because they're parents. say it. Their parents want to change every other parent's aspect on children.
The little girls at that school and their parents have rights too, ladies
exactly.
and gentlemen. If we're going to go down this road, then fine. Then make all the bathrooms at schools single-use bathrooms. Only one person in there at a time, and make it a rule that only one person goes in there at a time. That solves the whole problem. If we want to do that, then let's do it that way. This is ridiculous. It is absolutely mm-hmm. absurd.
Hey, just I another agree. Example of where, you know, just a penis ruins everything.
Well, you got well, that right. Yeah. You so got that right.
Here's the deal. We can only hope that the other parents end up suing for the civil rights of their children. Because here's what the problem is. I think oftentimes as conservatives or just normal everyday citizens, we see these liberals just attacking our court system. Mm-hmm. They're winning rights by squandering our rights or destroying our rights is what they do. So it's not we the people anymore. It's we in the courtroom. So unfortunately, we have to battle back that way. We've got to stand up.
Would you call that tyranny of the minority?
It could be. Yep, tyranny of the minority. Yeah. That's right.
He wants to use the girls' bathroom, and when I want to use the girls' bathroom, I'm a weirdo.
Yeah.
So,
jeez, I just don't you just feel sort of left out when we were kids? I mean, I could go to mom and dad and say, "Hey, look, I'll make you a deal. I'll be the best kid you ever had while we're at home. Just get me into the girls' bathroom and go. I'll do anything you want." I mean, this is absurd. Why shouldn't we make fun of it?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
folks.
Just go ahead and put urinals in the ladies' room. They won't stand for it.
Yeah. Before we go too much further, let's go to the break. So when we come back, we'll go to Larry's closing comments. And then don't forget, we're going to sew up tonight's show with a great song by Lloyd Marcus. And you can buy CDs of Lloyd Marcus at LloydMarcus.com. That's LLOYD, LloydMarcus.com. And we're going to play his show, Celebrate America. But that's later. Coming up next is Larry's Close. We'll be right back.
It's political, professional wrestling at its finest. The American Adversaries on 660 WORL and on 1520 The Biz.
Okay, we're back. That's right, folks. We are the American Adversaries. And before we get to Lair's closing comments, I just want to remind you, folks, in case you hadn't noticed, mortgage rates are going up. They've gone up almost a point in the last couple of weeks from around 3.75% to well over 4%. And this is making people starting to feel a little antsy and stuff about their houses. There's weird things going on in the housing market. And I know that there are people out there that you know or perhaps yourself who's underwater on your mortgage. If you're in this situation, do you feel overwhelmed, trapped? Do you want to sell, need to sell, but you can't sell? Have you been chasing a loan modification, but your paperwork keeps getting lost? Now you're ready to just move on with your life and get it over with. If this is your situation, or if you're contemplating bankruptcy, or if you're getting ready to go through a foreclosure, you need to call John Oviatt of Housing Relief Group. You can reach him at 407-255-2412. There's no cost to you. That's Housing Relief Group at 407-255-2412. And remember, there's absolutely no cost to you. If you just feel like you've had it, call John Oviatt of Housing Relief Group at 407-255-2412. Okay, folks, now it's time for Lair's closing comments. Lair, take her away.
Thanks, buddy. Friends, how was your 4th of July celebration this week? I hope it was a bang-up, happy, safe, and thoughtful one. Rarely do people sit back and cogitate about the deeper meaning of a holiday that is not just a date. The name of this celebratory occasion is Independence Day. Okay, you knew that. Everybody does. It just doesn't roll off the lips like July 4th or 4th of July. And the word independence, well, kind of sparks little knowledge cells in the backs of our brains that for a quick second makes us think. And hey, this is a holiday. Last thing I want to do is think. So here comes Lair tonight pulling that little headache of an idea to the forefront. Independence. What is that all about? It almost sounds like independence, which it sort of was. Obviously, it means not dependent on, doesn't it? I mean, well, most of the time. The heroic settlers of this nation could not live under a rule of dependency
mandated by a government born into power, not chosen. Their desire for self-dependency came from the very struggle for survival, and the reason they fled a tyrannical empire. They knew they could live independently as long as they held the freedom of self-rule. So today, let's get this straight. We celebrate this holiday for being independent from England, or tyranny, or a monarchy. Or is that all Independence Day should mean? I guess my question is, what are we independent of or from today? In fact, it kind of seems we're more dependent on so many things those settlers never had to deal with. It almost seems silly. We are so in dependence upon our government, our forefathers would be shocked. Technology has created a communication network among humans that is only rivaled by the ants. And as ridiculous as it sounds, we are totally dependent on something that can be interrupted, ended, altered, or manipulated. Oh, and let me ask you this. How independent are we from our national or global economies? Our ancestors were. They cared little for the affairs of other nations and depended on themselves. Of course, that could never happen today. We totally depend on local, state, and national government, along with our closest community. Why, we all know those who try to live independently and self-reliantly are the loonies that left the anthill. So you sat back watching fireworks and depending on someone else to bring you a beer. May you find some independence this week, everyone.
Great thoughts there, Larry, you know, and you're absolutely right about that. In this day and age of all the gadgets that we seem to think make us more independent, they just, in a way, make us more dependent.
So much, all the time we try to push away from this big government, but we're all so dependent on it.
That's why I like my car, you know?
Because, paid for one.
Well, yeah, it is. But it's one of your last refuges that you can really actually get in and be independent. And doggone, now they're sticking black boxes in them and all this other nonsense.
As long as your seatbelt's buckled.
Yeah.
As long as you're not texting.
Speaking of black boxes, have you guys ever seen the movie? It's an old black and white movie. I think it was produced in the 30s. It's called Death Takes a Holiday.
Oh, yes.
Have you seen that movie?
Oh, absolutely. Claude Rains.
Yeah, that's right. Claude Rains is in it. Death took a holiday the other day in San Francisco, didn't it? Mm, with that airline crash.
Only two people
died, and so many people walked away. Now, there are some seriously injured folks, but, I mean, to look at the burned-out hulk of that airplane, you wonder how anybody got out of there alive. But certainly, I don't know what caused the crash. We'll find out in the coming days. It appears as though it may be pilot error. I don't know, though, and I'm not talking about that. I'm just saying that, you know, I'm not saying a miracle happened, but by golly, if I walked away from that crash, I'd be saying a miracle happened.
And kudos to the crew. They said the crew did wonders getting everyone out.
That's right. So anyway, I just wanted to make mention of that. It did remind me of that old Claude Rains movie, Death Takes a Holiday. If you ever get a chance to see it, folks, it's an
wonderful
interesting
film.
Yeah, definitely. So check that out. And don't forget to check out Mark Walters with Armed American Radio. He's coming up next. He'll take you till the 11 o'clock hour, and he'll be live for the next 3 hours. And then we'll have a taped show of Pat Williams, and he does great interviews. And real quickly, Nostra Dennis, who's our guest tomorrow?
Well, tomorrow is former wrestler Mark Miro. Who do you know him as? What's his real...
Johnny B. Badd.
Well,
he's not the attorney in the Zimmerman trial.
We know Johnny Guns be good, so we know that Johnny B. Badd's going to be our guest tomorrow. He's actually got a new industry that he's working with, inspiring kids.
Mentoring kids, if you will, that's right. And he's got an inspiring story of his own, and what he went through after he left the wrestling business and what got him to where he is today. It's a fascinating story, folks. I think you'll appreciate it.
Tuesday, we got a great guest that we met over at the last NFL Players Association meeting.
That's right.
What's her name?
That's going to be Laura Janey.
She's a relationship expert.
Yeah, relationship coach, if you will. So you guys out there and you gals out there who have any questions about your partner or partner wannabe,
you need to listen to her.
That's right. And she had a radio show of her own, so maybe we can get her over here in our lineup at the Salem Communications.
By the way, Chris, it was not Claude Rains and Death Takes a Holiday. It was Frederick March.
Okay.
Just hit me.
I'm sorry. Yep. All right. Anyway, it is an excellent movie. As we end up the show tonight, though, folks, and by the way, once again, don't forget Carl Jackson, you're live. When, Carl?
Saturday mornings at 8.
And what's your website?
Website is carljacksonshow.com. Also, holyslant.com. If you just want to read my thinking, my thoughts, pick my brain, you can pick it at holyslant.com.
And Tyler Israel, you've been busy here tonight and haven't been able to talk much on the radio. Real quickly, once again, thanks for being with us tonight. And where can people hear more of our show?
If you'd like to hear our archives, you can always check us out at Podbean. We're updating that daily on iTunes. So that's always up there in case you missed the show.
And Tyler's been messing around and experimenting around with a little gadget here that we hope to bring online here real soon.
Absolutely. We're hoping to bring to you live video streaming of our Sunday edition shows so that you can not only listen to us, but sit in with us in the studio.
Can you see us?
Can you put more hair on me and Carl's heads?
Wait, now, hold it.
I'm done with
clothes?
Hair. I don't want to shave.
I have to wear clothes now?
That's right, Larry. You're going to have to finally
at
put
least
your pants. You're going to have to put your pants back on. That's right, folks. We're going to have a lot of fun with that.
Warming up in here.
Right now, though, we're going to leave you with Celebrate America by Lloyd Marcus. God bless America. God bless you, folks.
See you tomorrow. Night.
Hard, we've got to stick together. Hold on to the things that are real. 'Cause we've survived through every kind of weather. And the love in our hearts, no one can steal. We live in a land blessed with freedom, for which many brave have fought and died. So let's celebrate the values that money can't buy. Let's celebrate America. Let's celebrate our families. Let's celebrate our home. Let's celebrate us home. Let's celebrate our spirit. Let's celebrate our goals. Let's celebrate the will to carry on. So let's celebrate the values that money can't buy. Let's celebrate America. Americans never yield. We always strive to make things a little better. It's part of the heritage we feel. And though we come from many different nations, our colors are red, white, and so let's celebrate the values that money can't buy. Let's celebrate America. Let's celebrate our families. Let's celebrate our home. Let's celebrate the things that make us whole. Let's celebrate. Celebrate the values that money can't buy. Let's celebrate America. tenderly.